Good evening, everyone. First day of summer. Y'all are excited about vacation, beach, and all of that. I'd like to call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting on this day, June the 21st, 2017. Would you stand and say the pledge with us in a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a very full agenda this afternoon. You all ready?
We are. We're trying to get this off our plate. That's why we're dumping it on yours.
Yes, right. Our chair is, I hope he's away doing something fun, relaxing. I hope so. Is that true?
He is, yes.
He is?
He might be back later tonight, but he said he doubted he'd make it here.
Yes.
He did, he looked grubby, so.
Well.
We'll have to dock him, won't we?
I think so. Yeah. We've already started the payroll action.
And I'd like to welcome Perry Johnson from the school board to sitting in our meeting. She's here quite often. Thank you for coming, Perry.
Thank you.
And now we will have the adoption of the agenda.
One noted item, I think it's on tab O on your sheet.
Yes, I see it's deferred.
Yeah.
Tab O, since
it was published. But no other changes from staff.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do we have a motion?
So made.
Second. All right. It has been moved and seconded that the agenda is adopted. All in favor? Anyone opposed? We are ready to go. County administrator's report, please.
Yes, ma'am. Just a few items to report. So park access has actually gotten easier for people that are electronic nowadays. Mm-hmm. Many of us have smartphones that we carry around with us, or even a tablet. You can scan one of these boxes, lots of different places in the park, where it's got the Q code on it, and if you use the app on your phone, just scan that. It goes immediately to the Parks and Rec website and to the maps, so you have an electronic trail map with you instead of having to carry the paper one around or getting it all crumpled up or wet in the rain. So it's a nice, easy feature that Aaron Spitzer, our Parks and Rec director, has got in place now at the parks.
Good, Aaron.
Eagle Scout did a great project, approved by my wife. We were down there last night driving through the park, and she got to see the project that Wolfie Reisinger, a Eagle Scout candidate, had gotten done. He built these enclosures around the porta-johns that are permanent at the park. Mm-hmm. We have three of them that are there on a regular basis. We have many more for events, of course, but the regular ones. And he built these enclosures around them and just make them a little better site and a little more better aesthetics at the park. And so it was a nice project, and we appreciate it. He did a really good job on them as well. And Blue Ridge Balloon is our spotlight on business. I think a lot of you have probably seen balloons over Charlottesville many times if you've been in town at all, but they fly over Pleasant Grove all the time as well. I see them on the way to work in the mornings oftentimes, and the balloons are just beautiful up there. They've got a great experience set in their balloon business, over 30 years of experience, and a perfect safety record, which is a pretty good thing when you're riding that high up in the air, and a lot of fun. And I've actually checked out the rates online. The rates are quite reasonable compared to many other ones I've seen around the country, and it's a local business that we love supporting.
So we can go out and ride?
Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yep. They offer single, group, wedding balloon rides, a whole variety of different packages you can get through that company. And of course, depends on the weather and the winds and things like that, so, because they practice such safe flying that you usually get a really great flight from them, from what I've heard from other folks.
How many can they take at one time?
I don't know, Ms. Weaver. Some balloons can go up to 8 or 10 or 12. Right. I'm not sure what kind of gondola they use, but I think their website had information about different levels and different types of flights, but I'm not sure how big their gondolas are. And then Zion Crossroads Economic Development Luncheon is coming up. That's June 27th, Tuesday, June 27th. It's from noon to 1:30, and it's a better living at Zion Crossroads. And this is just a way to get commercial developers and investors and property owners and business owners out there to do some networking and talk about the water project and talk about business opportunities and do some collaboration. So that's Tuesday, June 27th. I'll have Ms. Harris put that on your calendars, and then you can accept it on your calendar if you'd like to go to that. We'd just like to know how many people are coming so that we can plan lunch appropriately, but we'll get that on your calendars probably this evening while we're talking. So, and then JABA is doing insurance counseling here in Savannah County now, and for those of us that are getting close to 65 and Medicare age, it would be great to go to that training. Everyone needs Medicare counseling before they go to Medicare, no matter what kind of expert you are about healthcare and health insurance. I was a healthcare administrator for decades. I'm certainly going to take the class in the next year or two as I get closer, because it's really important. And if you understand Medicare and the need and the coverage and the benefits and the need for other types of coverages and using the plan correctly, you can really do well, but you really need to know. So everyone should be going to counseling, you know, in the year before they turn 65. And then in your next BLS meetings, remember, you get one more meeting in 2 weeks on the 5th of July, and then you get a free month, because July is the single meeting month where you do a 4 o'clock meeting in the afternoon and then a 7 o'clock meeting in the evening for your public hearings to give some vacation time for folks. And so July 5th, and then back to regular schedule in August on the first and third Wednesdays, of course. I don't have any work sessions planned, although there'll be some public works and water utilities things coming up later in summer you'll have to work on, and we may want to talk to you about scheduling one before that August 16th meeting. But we'll let you know at your next meeting if we need to. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Nope.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Before I open public comment, number one, we have 5 public hearings this afternoon. So if you're here to speak about one of these public hearings, then you can come up when we introduce that particular public hearing. Right now, if anyone would like to come before the board with anything else, would you please come forward, give your name and your address, and address the board, and you have 5 minutes to give your presentation. Do we have someone? So I will now open the public comment.
Hi, I'm Joe Shaver, and I live at 13 Rockwood Lane in Lake Monticello. Excuse me. I'm here tonight representing the Grace and Glory Lutheran Church over on Route 53 across from the library. We are in the planning phase of an event that's going to be held on September the 9th, and we are calling it Feeding Fluvanna Community Day, and we indeed want it to be a community day. We are going to have a petting zoo for the kids. We're going to have crafters there. We're going to have a vendor for barbecue. We're going to have a yard sale. Bertha's going to be there for the representing the Fluvanna County Food Bank, and also a representative of the Blue Ridge Food Bank is going to be there with Bertha, talking about issues of hunger, issues of food depravity. At any rate, we are devoting the proceeds of that entire day to the MACA Food Bank and Bertha. So we are encouraging everybody to come out and participate, and we're seeking participation from not just our members at Grace and Glory, but also from individuals with other entities. And that's why I'm here tonight, because I'm soliciting. And as much as this is going to be a religious body, we thought an immersion event would be in order, and therefore there will be a dunking tank. And our pastor will be primary in sitting on that dunking tank. He already has the support of the pastor over at Effort Baptist Church. And when we market this, we would like to say we're going to have a dunking tank, and there's going to be a representative from the Board of Supervisors from the other churches.
Who's not here
tonight? I've already talked to Sheriff Hess, and he's promised me he would provide somebody. So we can add to that list from the sheriff's office. So we have a sign-up sheet here. And anyone that would wish to participate.
What I tell you, Mr. Shaver, I would do.
Do what?
What did I tell you about the dunking tank?
Mm-hmm. Okay. At any rate, that's why I'm here, both to announce that event to you all, because we truly do want it to be a community event in support of the Fluvanna County Food Bank.
At what time?
It's going to be held from 10 o'clock till 3 o'clock.
10 to 3.
On that Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
And since I didn't look at my watch when I started, but I think I've got a couple minutes left, so I'll do my political pitch as a representative, as Fluvanna County's coordinator for One Virginia 2021. And we are in the business of working for legislative redistricting reform and to end gerrymandering. And we've been at this for about 4 years now. And I spoke to you a couple years ago and asked you to consider a resolution on behalf of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to support our organization and try and do away with this democracy killer that is gerrymandering. So if we feel we would want to move down that path, I encourage you to please be in touch with me and we can arrange it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board? Okay, if not, I will close the first public comments. And we will go into our public hearing. Okay, SUP 1701, Education Transformation Center. Mr. Newman.
Good evening, members of the board. Before your request for a special use permit to establish an educational facility use with respect to a portion of 0.74 acres of tax parcel 18-10-1. The property is zoned B1, business general. Adjacent properties are zoned A1, B1, and R3. And the use for this educational facility will itself be located within a former school building. An educational facility is a public or private institution for the teaching of children or adults, including primary and secondary schools, colleges, similar facilities. Location will be to the southeast of Lake Monticello. The CVS building is located right here. The Dogwood is up by this intersection. The structure will be located here inside the old ABC preschool. As you can see, its current zoning is B1, surrounded by B1, A1, and then R3. There'll be approximately 13 staff for this use, no more than 30 students. This is a six-week program aimed towards at-risk youth, and there'll be an intensive curriculum as well as supervision of students on site. This is a proposed building. They don't have any proposed additions to add onto the exterior of the site. All renovations will be interior to make it more compliant with the ADA, new flooring, more lighting, different classroom arrangement. This is the front of the structure. Looking at the right side, looking at the left side. The educational use is to be located in a former school building, approximately 30 employees, no more than 30 students per semester. Appears to meet the requirements of our zoning ordinance, and the Planning Commission unanimously recommended approval 3-0 at their June 13th meeting. The applicant is here this evening. We can answer any questions you may have.
Okay, you've heard the report and the applicant is here. Would you like for the applicant to come forward with some questions? Would you like for the applicant to come forward? Do you have some questions?
I've heard her at the Planning Commission meeting, so if she'd like to come forward to make her presentation.
Applicant, would you please come forward, Ms. Carr?
Ask her if she brought any food.
Did you bring any? Yes. Yes.
Questions for me or just my comments?
Right. I would like to, are they riding the bus to the ABC? You're providing?
Well, I should say whomever referred them will be providing transportation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Are referrals usually from social services or where are the referrals coming from?
Social services, police department, Charlottesville Albemarle, and in addition to the school systems. And we're looking at surrounding counties as well.
How many counties aside from Albemarle to that are participating in?
Probably parking spaces. I can hardly hear.
How many counties other than Savannah?
We have Albemarle, Charlottesville, Nelson, Green, Louisa, and Madison.
Okay, and you're calling this an alternative school, alternative education?
That is correct.
I noticed the curriculum, and of course you're doing the academics, so they'll be able to go back to their high school and fit right in?
That is correct. We will spend half the day working on the soft skills, which would be anger management, conflict resolution, et cetera, et cetera. And then the PM class is to complete any assignments that they receive from the home school.
Okay.
And it's for 6 weeks?
Yes, it's a 6 weeks turnaround. You got to get it fast.
Right.
It's a very intense program.
Yeah,
so
program.
Each day is already designed and been set up, so they're constantly moving. In the afternoon, they're completing their work.
What's been your experience in the past with this?
Well, this is a new program.
This is a prototype?
Yes, and I wrote this, but I've been involved with alternative education in the past, and it's totally different from what I've experienced myself.
Well, that is a quick turnaround.
Yes. Do you have a strong program with parents?
Yes, as part of, before they can even come to the school, we have to have a meeting with the parent, and there is follow-up biweekly.
Are you funded through Medicaid?
Some students will be.
Will be funded through Medicaid.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Thanks.
It will largely be CSA funded?
No, it could be such a mixed variety because of, you know, the schools as well. And so, and even if private people can, involve the students or their child in the program.
And will you be remaining with the school soon?
Yes.
Your position?
No.
Oh, okay.
So, in this way, this may help us so we don't have to send children away to other institutions.
That is correct.
It could
help, goal.
Help save money for Savannah County.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And the age would be from 8th grade to 12 or 9?
No, we're taking 9 through 12.
9 through 12. What kind of qualifications does your teachers have? Do they have to have a special with dealing with special needs children? Do you have special ed?
Teachers will be certified.
Okay.
And we will have a special ed person on staff.
Mm-hmm.
We do not anticipate that every person will be
definitely
special
yes.
needs.
Right. Will you have a social worker, a psychologist?
We do have in our budget for a therapist.
How many?
One therapist.
Good, good. Okay. We need this. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Cobb.
Thank you.
Now we'll open it up for public hearing. Anyone would like to come forward and speak about this transforming school alternative education program, please come to the mic, address the board, and you have 5 minutes. Do we have anyone? Okay, if not, I will close the first public hearing. The next one is SUP 7. Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 1701 and request establishment educational facilities with respect to a portion of 0.074 acres of tax parcel 18101, subject to the 6 conditions listed in staff report.
Second.
All right. It has been moved and second. We have all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And the chair votes aye. Motion is carried. Okay, next one is now SUP 1702, R15 Fluvan 11B LLC. Mr. Robinson.
Good evening, Madam Chairman and a member of the board. I'm going to give a brief presentation for special use permit SUP 1702. This is a request for a special use permit to establish a contractor storage yard for a roofing contractor on parcel identified as tax map 5115B, which is within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. The definition from the zoning ordinance for contractor storage yard is defined as what you see on the screen. So I'm components of the operation would include, for example, storage of large equipment, vehicles, or other materials commonly used in the individual contractor's type of business, storage of scrap materials used for repair and maintenance of contractors on equipment, and buildings or structures for uses such as offices and repair facilities. So a combination of those different activities would be involved with this request. As you'll see in the concept plan, no new buildings are proposed with this request. This special use permit proposes to utilize an existing site that's already developed. So this is a map showing the location of the parcel within the county. If you can see the green star on the map towards the top, that shows that this parcel is basically at the intersection of Route 250 and Route 15. Right here in this area. And then this is an aerial image of the property. I'll note that the GIS is an error in showing the blue line here, which is supposed to represent the property line. The blue line is not supposed to extend this far south. The property line is more so in this area right here. And the applicant's concept plan does reflect that. But as you can see in this area, the property has existing buildings on it. It's already currently developed, and the applicant is proposing to utilize these existing structures.
That's the old I&J construction site. It's the old model home that's there. In front of it is REMAX. Behind is the building they're going to use, plus the storage building. He'll show some photos. But right next to it is that landscaping business. And then just past is the traffic island at 15 and 53, or 15 and 250.
That's correct. This is the applicant's sketch plan. The building Mr. Nichols was just speaking of, that's REMAX office. That is this building here towards the front of the property. The building in the center of the property where I&J office was located, that will become the office for the proposed business, which is Lynchburg Roofing. And then at the rear there is a garage or a shed, which is proposed to continue to serve as such, with parking of vehicles or other equipment in the rear. This photograph shows the entrance, the existing entrance into the site, and you can see the proximity to the intersection of 250 and 15 there in the background. There's the traffic light for that intersection, and this is the entrance into the site. And again, that's the existing REMAX office, which I understand will continue to be occupied by REMAX at the applicant's discretion. And then when you pull into the site, this is the former I&J Home Builders office, again to become the office for Lynchburg Roofing, Charlottesville. And then as you pull around to the rear of the office, this is the existing shed or the garage that will serve for storage, maintenance, and repair, etc. And then this is a storage yard behind that area, which will, I believe some of this material will be removed from the site, and this will serve for parking of the company's equipment, vehicles, and so forth. So to conclude, this is a special use permit request to establish a contractor storage yard. The property is already developed. This project appears to meet all county code as requirements of the zoning ordinance. And I will mention that the Planning Commission did recommend approval of this project at their meeting on June the 13th. They recommended approval by a vote of 3-0. And that concludes my presentation. A sample motion is on the screen for your use. I can attempt to answer any questions you might have, and I'll note that the applicant is present this evening as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Robinson? Would you like to speak to the applicant? Where's the applicant so we can see? Hi, how are you? Do you have any questions?
Was at the Planning Commission as well, too.
Yeah. Okay, you don't.
I think most of significant note is this is 25 to 30 new jobs. That's right.
Yes.
Oh,
great.
Yep.
Wonderful.
And space being used in the back is not being kept as well as it will be kept.
Mm-hmm.
The existing landowners are very positive about the changes. So it's great business. Very glad to have another
great
business in the area.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? If not, I'll open the public hearing. Anyone who would like to speak about this SUP 1702. Please come forward and address the board. You have 5 minutes, sir. Give your name and address.
My name's Roger Henry. I live at 3807 Bear Tree Lane in Columbus, Virginia, but I'm here representing Mrs. Johnson, who's directly behind the property there. It's a residential property. She's an elderly lady, and right now there's a trucking company that's using the property illegally, from what I hear. But they're putting trash back there. They're making loud noises late at night. They're just rude people. And from what I understand, this man here is going to be a good neighbor, so I don't want to stop him. But you're going to make it a contractor's yard. And once, if he ever leaves, anybody else can move in there with heavy equipment and make a lot of noise and stuff. I don't want to stop him, but I'd like to look out for future use of this place if he ever leaves. And also the fence around the place is deteriorating, and the trucking company is using the entrance on Cedar Bent Lane there, the driveway, and they're tearing it up. It's a mess right now. So I'd just like to look out for those things. Make sure Mrs. Johnson is taken care of.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board? If not, I will close the public hearing and bring it to the board. Do we have any discussion? We have heard the one concern from Mr. County Administrator. Are you? Oh, I'm sorry, Jason.
Just to follow up on his comments on the it does transfer to an additional use. The conditions will remain in effect, so there are restrictions on the hours of operation and things of that nature. So those conditions will, if another contractor storage yard moves in, they'll be subject to those same conditions.
Okay.
Excuse me, were you aware of Mrs. Johnson's concerns? Yes.
She's been in contact. Mr. Henry's been in contact with the planning department.
Okay.
Okay. So we are looking out for her concerns.
Correct. And they still have to go through the site plan process to meet the screen requirements and all.
Okay.
All
right. Right. Could you keep us informed so that we'll know that she's been taken care of?
Sure.
Okay.
Fortunately, that other contractor will be gone.
Okay.
And so you won't have the same access.
We won't have it, but we're clean.
The other contractor is using that street there, and I believe the existing property owner had an agreement to be able to use that road, but they would also maintain it so that the lady would also have good access to there. But this company that's been kind of renting the site has not been quite as good a neighbor, and I think Lynchburg Roofing will be much better because they won't be bringing a lot of equipment on site necessarily. They'll be delivering their goods to the sites, and then the work of their staff would be there.
And they're not.
Should they pull out another, the conditions will remain as well as the zoning standards that govern the use.
Yeah, and the time was from 7 to, what was the time? Look, I saw the time different.
Hours of operation for the business office on the site is 8:30 to 5,
okay.
But employees that are doing work at the job sites will arrive as early as 6:30,
mm-hmm.
And they may leave as late as 7 p.m.
But it's not a lot of, not a lot of noise.
And I understand the storage is going to keep is very limited. That's my understanding.
If you want the applicant, he can explain the operation.
Sure.
So.
Well, since he's here.
Sure.
Can talk to us. Thank you. Okay.
So there was a question about how much storage we would be keeping there. Yeah, all of our material is delivered directly from our supplier to the job site.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just be little odds and ends that are left over that we keep there. And then as far as trucks and equipment, we don't have any, none of our trucks require CDL. They're just, they're big pickup trucks. They're crew cab pickup
mm-hmm.
trucks. And we pull dump trailers, but it's just, it's not like we're going to be coming in out of there with dump trucks and tractor trailers
okay.
or anything like that.
All right, that's good.
And And there's not really any work done on site either. It's a meeting place with a jump-off point for the crews in the morning, and they return at night. And at night, there really isn't any noise at all. They pull their trucks in and get in their cars and go home. They're even trying to get to dinner.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not like we're doing heavy equipment maintenance or anything late at night.
All right, thank you.
Lynchburg Roofing also has a successful operation, obviously in Lynchburg, but they expanded to Roanoke and have 25 or so, 24 or so employees there in Roanoke. And this is another expansion, but it'll be great because of our things that may be building on there. We'll have another contractor that can support those operations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, then we will go to the motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approves SUP 1702, a request to establish a contractor storage yard with respect to 1.8 acres of Tax Map 5, Section 11, Parcel 5B, subject to the six conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? No opposes. So the chair votes aye.
Madam Chairman, can I make one observation for you? You know, this is not on this item specifically.
Right.
But if you noticed, Mr. Robinson made a comment about the depiction of the tax map.
Mm-hmm.
This is another instance where our contractor for our tax maps has been less than precise with some of these property lines.
Mm-hmm.
They ran into this in a very significant way in the former town of Columbia.
Yes.
And I have been thinking about whether anybody else has, that we ought to do a little tweaking of this map. Mm-hmm. I know Mr. Newman has done some work on some of the maps, particularly in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And you may see more of that. You might actually get a request to get some outside help.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Newman. We have the sign ordinance.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome
to Savannah. Thank you. Y'all have a good evening. Zoning text amendment 1701, amendments to our sign ordinance. We've added a definition for special advertising. This is going to include categories such as grand opening signs, under new management signs, similar events or activities. Only one such sign shall be permitted at one time per business, and they're to be treated as temporary signs. We've had some issues with people who want to get grand opening signs. This is a way to address those concerns. We've also added and clarified what entrance signs are for. You can have at least one per entrance. We've also increased the size to 12 square feet, and they can be up to 4 feet in height. Most of our sign changes have been upgraded, for example, for business signs, doing from 24 square feet in area up to 32 square feet in area. We've also changed the height to 10 feet in height, up from 6. We've added that category of entrance signs, and we've modified some of the language for our subdivision advertising signs as well as wall signs. We made similar changes to our residential and mobile home zoning, as well as to our residential, business, and industrial. And we've gone ahead and increased business signs from 24 to 32 square feet if they're freestanding, all the way up to 40 square feet for monument signs. This allows for larger business signs, especially for ones that are parts of shopping centers, as well as business or industrial parks. This map shows our Zion Crossroads community planning area here in blue. And then there's a subset that's the urban development area. It's smaller, it's here in red. We've added a new overlay zone for that smaller subset because that's where we're going to have lots of industrial and business growth. We've gone ahead and increased our business signs up to 36 and 40 square feet in area, as well as 20 feet and 25 feet in height, depending on the style, as well as lodging for 2.5 square feet of sign area for each lineal foot of building frontage up to a max of 200 square feet, and this compares with what Louisa County has. Mr. O'Brien at our Planning Commission session had asked us to look into whether or not we in Louisa County allow roof signs. Neither county allows signs above the roof line. He also asked us to look into inflatable signs, and Fluvanna County specifically prohibits inflatable signs. Louisa does not have a definition for inflatable signs, but they don't permit any signs which flutter or move by any means. This comparison of these zoning around Louisa with our zoning right next to Zion's Crossroads. Louisa has commercial one, commercial two zoning, where the Walmart, the Lowe's, Burger King, all that growth is around. And then this is just a comparison of what our proposed changes are compared to Louisa. So again, we've upped our size to 32 square feet and 40 square feet for those businesses that are not part of a business or a shopping center. For those that are part of a shopping center, we've gone ahead and put up to 1.5 square feet of sign area per linear foot of building frontage, up to a maximum of 150 square feet. And this compares with what Louisa has. They have 2.5 square feet to a max of 200. We have 1.5 square feet to a max of 150. And then this compares our more intensive urban development area signage, again, to that same zoning from Louisa, where our maximum is now what they have, 2.5 square feet of sign area for each linear foot of building frontage to a max of 200. And that's exactly what Louisa has, again, because this is a more intensive economic growth area for the county. Other places such as Powhatan have access to, say, a Walmart. So signage is not a definitive factor in whether or not we can have growth here, but by increasing our sizes, it makes it for a better environment for businesses to come work here. Here's some sign samples we have. This is from the Village Station just across the road here next to the BP. The rest of these are from Louisa County. These are monument signs, the IHOP, the Taco Bell, the Best Western. And by increasing our sign sizes, we would allow for things similar to this type of growth. So overall, larger sign sizes for most of our zoning categories. We've got that added entrance signs, the urban development area sign overlay to get better signage for our business centers and industrial parks, and to further the economic goals of our comprehensive plan. Board resolution and a motion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Newman. Do we have some questions?
Just say a sheet of plywood.
What?
A sheet of plywood.
About a sheet of plywood, yeah.
Yeah.
So, if we go back to the picture of this for a second, it's the one with the clock on it. That's obviously a large monument sign, obviously.
Right.
This one?
Well, I'm talking about
top.
That's considerably bigger than 40 square feet, I think.
That is true, yes. We would have so much smaller versions of these. We don't go up to the exact height that Louisa has. We can amend that if the board would like to go in that direction. The language that we've got has been worked on by the Planning Commission for several months, and Jason Smith, our Economic and Community Director, has been in contact with the business community. He says that the changes that we have proposed are agreeable.
So in the UDA, we have the heights the same as what Louisa would have, the 25 to 30 feet, 20 to 30 feet, depending on the size. But then we only have a maximum 200 square feet based on their aggregate frontage for the building or tenant. Mm-hmm. So it's a little smaller. But many of these, we would allow similar types of signs, but just potentially on a smaller scale.
Why would we just make them the same?
If you go through South Carolina and all you see is signs everywhere, it's really the difference between kind of a wide open sign, sign allowances, and what some organizations or localities want is something more restrictive and a little bit more, maybe less eye shocking. But that's up to the Board of Supervisors. The staff did a lot of comparisons with surrounding counties and even checked out in some outlying counties, like the Powhatan example there. Powhatan doesn't allow anything as big as what Louisa or we would propose. But they're still thriving with economic interests. So getting these close so that you still have the ability to put a large sign in front of a shopping area seemed reasonable, but that's why the proposal has been vetted for a number of months and can still be modified to what the board may further desire.
Well, that was the only notable difference here, the 300 square feet versus 200 square feet.
Right. Indeed. Largely, everything else is pretty close. And we're exactly the same on this one, but when you get up into the business shopping center, we're a little bit smaller than what Louisa, the standard is, but it probably depends on the locality. You can find these numbers widely varying from locality to locality. It depends on what you want the look to be in our county.
And you and I have discussed the fact that maybe there was this sort of special use, signage process, and is that the case or not the case?
Currently, that's not the case.
That for certain, say, Cracker Barrel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So can you address, if I'm a business coming in and I normally have a massive whatever type of sign, can I get it special use permit to have that kind of sign, or do we, is there a special use permit process to get something different than what would be in here, and would it be necessary?
Under this proposal, there would have to be an independent ordinance to have any type of signs that is taller than 30 feet, monument style, 25 feet freestanding in our business parks. So that's not an option in this. It's something that the board wishes to add.
But you said, it, like, as a matter of fact, the Powhatan example and other places you've been hasn't limited the businesses from coming there, because that Walmart sign example that the staff has shown, I think that's in Powhatan, isn't it?
Yeah.
They don't have the great big normal Walmart sign. They have this type of sign. And there are places in Northern Virginia that are like that too, where they didn't want the same kind of eyesores. In our case, we have the advantage of road structure that drives you to that area, the interstate and the convergence of highways. And so at a big intersection like that that's not all treed, you wouldn't necessarily need as big a signs, but this is up to the board's decision on how you want to do
it. My interactions with economic development in various places I've worked, the signage isn't the deciding factor of the business locating. You know, county, if they're going to come, a large-scale business, they're going to come and modify themselves to, for example, Walmart and Powhatan. The regulations exist within reason. They might fit around the edges of changes, but they don't.
What would be the disadvantage of having a process in place, if we're amending the ordinance now, that would allow for, you know, a special use signage permit, if you would, from that standpoint? I mean, other than, you know, if it comes to the board and maybe it's frivolous, what would be the disadvantages that you would think of from that standpoint?
Well, I know at the city of Richmond we have a special use permit process for certain signs, and those two do tend to happen a lot frequently in a more urban area, which tends to lead to a lot of staff applications, and which begs the question, if you're going to allow it, why not just make a development standard? So
you'd get potentially widely varying impacts of, you know, this comes in, you kind of want that, and this comes in, you kind of don't want that, and the application of a special use permit process for something that is kind of a modified part of the sign orders, I would think would be more cumbersome to manage over time. And if it really depends on what you want visually in your county. If you want I'll use the South Carolina example, because there's signs everywhere, and big signs, or do you want the more demure, you know, smaller? Most of what we can allow in our county based on this draft ordinance is things you see on the screen right now, but potentially somewhat smaller, same heights. In most cases, but somewhat smaller. This IHOP sign would be allowed. These would be allowed. This one probably is still within standard, although the height's probably still within standard too. These are a little bit bigger than what they would be, but the height standard is the same as what Louisa has. So, and that's the most comparable, because it's right, you know, for the Zion Crossroads area anyway. This one is actually, could be a problem. It's probably grandfathered because it's been there for some time, but it's probably larger than was originally allowed, and it just kind of got added on and added on. But many of our businesses have clamored for something visually easier to see on a 45 and 55 mile an hour highway, like on 15 and 250. So. But it's definitely up to the board to board's discretion on how you want, how big or how different you want the signage to be from the surrounding area.
Are there any other questions? Ms. Beaver, did you have something?
No, I don't.
Okay. Anyway. Okay. Then now open up the public hearing. Anyone who would like to comment on the ZTA 1701 sign ordinance, please come to the podium, give your name and address. Address the board, and you have 5 minutes. Do we have anyone? If not, I will close the public comment for him. Next is ZTA 7. Oops, I'm sorry, let's vote. I don't want you all to vote.
Discussion vote.
We do want to move
fast.
Do
you want to vote? Okay.
Something on TV at 10 o'clock.
Thank
I need.
You.
Yeah,
is
we're trying to get that basketball game in.
Empire, huh?
So whatever's on today.
No, I don't.
Well, only
two comments, you know, are basically, I would go with the 300 square feet versus 200 square feet. Why differentiate? It's not that many businesses that are going to use that size signage to begin with. That would be my thought on that. And, you know, as far as inflatable signs, I think maybe the only thing I would add there is if it's a temporary sign, you know, I could foresee that down the road.
I believe not that he has temporary, but not permanent.
Yeah. Right.
So the little wavy man right. You can have for a temporary mm-hmm. sign for sale or for an event or things right. like that, but not public. Now, a question that I forgot to ask before. The wavy signs that were at Carysbrook Elementary for the entire mm-hmm. year, are those allowed in the update?
Were the inflatable signs?
No, they were the, yeah. they were the, you know, on the right. pole, the plastic Carysbrook. Pole, there were the wavy signs and flags.
And
I don't recall those signs, but
it's like the banner signs that, you know, it has the long pole and then it has an upright banner on it, like at the Pleasantville Park for the
right.
for the farmers market. They have that one that waves up or something. It's a tall vertical sign.
If it was on a permanent basis and was advertising something, then it wouldn't be in compliance with the ordinance.
But it can be used for temporary.
Yes.
Okay.
It would be temporary. Because you had temporary.
If it was yes. temporary, it would
okay. But they had the name of the school on it. So, and it stayed up a long time. They weren't advertising anything. They just had Carysbrook on it. It was written on it. So.
Yeah, there was a lot of question about that yes. last year because we right. normally don't allow those.
Yes.
And a business can have them for a special event, but not mm-hmm. on a permanent basis. And they were kind of there on a permanent basis.
Right.
So you all have to set the tone for that so we know how to enforce it. I mean, if that's included or not included.
Right. I would hate for the school to have to go out and spend money for these signs and then find out that they can't keep them up.
Well, they did and put them up and
they kept
did it
up.
Anyway, yes, for the entire year.
Yeah. So, okay.
And I do think the roof sign, you know, again, I can foresee where a hotel or something along those lines comes in. And that would be above the line, probably is not ideal, but similar.
But many of the new modern hotels, I mean, the Holiday Inn Expresses and the Western, the Best Westerns and things, they're on the upper levels, but they're on the side of the structure, or they have the freestanding sign out front. So we have some signs, well, as a matter of fact, a roof sign at the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office. It's on the front-facing roof of it, but it doesn't extend above the roof line, and so it would still be allowed.
I just wanted to also make a point that this probably be subject to change as we see more development in Zions Crossroads, as we interact with more businesses and see their needs as they're coming through Vienna. We expect to be back to make tweaks right. to this ordinance.
Yeah, that's
as
right.
needed.
That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Leave it like it is, and if you have problems in the future, we can
come back
at it and tweak it.
I wouldn't think of this as just it's going to stay static for the next 10 or 20 years.
Right.
Right. The last changes were 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
We may be back before then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now we're ready for the motion. Oh, wow.
Can they say as what? Presented?
Yes.
As okay. You can say as presented. Who wants okay. to make
it? So I would suggest as spelled out in the staff report.
ZPA 1701, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I move that the board approve zoning text amendment ZTA 1701 as spelled out in the staff report.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and second. All in favor?
Thank you.
Anyone opposed? And the chair votes aye. Thank you. And the next one is ZTH 1702 PUD ordinance. Mr. Newman.
Yes, this affects our plan unit development zoning category. Our current ordinance language currently states that plan unit developments should be located within designated growth areas of the county as set forth in our 2015 comprehensive plan, to which our comprehensive plan states restrict approval of plan unit development zoning to Zion Crossroads to allow for increased flexibility, et cetera, et cetera. Our proposed zoning text amendment removes references to allowing PUDs in every community planning area that isn't located within Zion Crossroads. Two highlights of our amended language. The first one is that We've changed it to say plan unit developments must be located within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area as set forth in the comprehensive plan. And our second big change in language is in regards to water and sewer systems, where we've changed it to say all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both publicly provided central water and sewerage systems. And we have an alternative language for you as well that says all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both public water and public sewer systems unless expressly permitted otherwise by the Board of Supervisors. We currently have zoning ordinance definition for public water and sewer systems. It's a water or water sewer system owned and operated by a municipality, county, or other political subdivision of the Commonwealth. These aren't free, publicly provided services. It just means that they're owned by a public authority or public entity. This is location of our Zion's Crossroads Community Planning Area. In conclusion, all of our PUDs, according to our comprehensive plan, must be located within the Zion CPA. Water and sewer systems must be publicly provided. The board retains the ability to approve or deny PUD zoning requests and may take into consideration our public water sewage capacity when making its decision. Board resolution, board motion. And we have Wayne Stevens from Public Works is here, as well as Jason Stewart and other staff members.
Okay, thank you. Would you like for staff members to come forward if you have any questions? Do you have any questions? Mrs. So, Stevens here.
I have two things. One, I'm concerned, you know, we moved from a maximum of six per acre, six houses per acre, to the PUD, where you have 16 or greater than that per acre. There's no real place in between. And I'm a little, and I understand the reasoning behind getting rid of the PUD in many parts of the county, but personally, I think in my van, it still probably belongs there, in the sense that you with the concentration around the lake area, I could see where, you know, you could have an opportunity for additional type of concentration type PUD efforts. And so I'm not a big fan of removing Rivanna from the PUD component there. The second thing on the water and sewer, we talked a bit about during the Planning Commission meeting, the central water, obviously we're gonna have central water in Zion's Crossroads, and central water and sewer is important. And that came up when we were having the vote on the golf course area. But seeing as we do not have any large quantities of sewer in place, and the ability to grow into that may be down the road and certainly expensive, to me it seems that the second alternative amended language is important, is very important in this case, in that it provides the board and provides the applicant an opportunity to tell us how they might maintain and run a, you know, private sewer system, whether that's a drip field or some other alternative that they would have in place from that standpoint. So to me, that second portion is quite important from that standpoint. So those are my two things.
I just want to emphasize again, the board retains the ability, because a PUD is a rezoning request, it has to go before the Planning Commission and then the board, and you can take into account, again, the water sewage capacity when you're making your decision to approve or not.
But if we say it's only located at Science Crossroad Community, then what Mr. Bryant is saying, there's nothing, no room in there for PUD to be in the Ravenna area.
Not according to the goal of the comprehensive plan.
Really,
it says keep it within Zion CPA.
Right, yes.
And if you specifically say public central water and sewer, right now you run into the fact that our capacity is at 125,000, which is potentially going to be used up very quickly.
So are you thinking of changing that language?
The alternate amended language, I think, addresses that, because it more or less says that the Board of Supervisors can allow a different system.
Right.
And Madam Chairman, I have a comment on that. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear about this proposal until today.
Right.
So I didn't get an opportunity to review it in any detail, but I have concerns about the legality of this last provision. There's a case that deals with similar concepts. It's the Sinclair case that came out of Albemarle County 5 years ago or so now, And the thrust of it was from the Supreme Court that the only way that it's lawful to vary vary the provisions of a zoning ordinance is through a variance, special use permit, a rezoning, or if the language itself provides standards for that variation. So if you had something that said, if a building is more than 500 feet from an interstate highway, it can be 10 feet tall or something like that, but you have to have a standard for it. This language contains no standard. So the board, if the developer came in and said, I don't want public water or sewer, I want something else. Under this language, there would be no standard to guide the board, right. and I question whether under the Sinclair case that's lawful.
I agree with Mr. Payne. This language was there really for discussion tonight. The alternate one, from where it says all uses down to systems, just that first sentence, is just, staff thinks, a more clarity than the one right above it, because it uses the definition out of the zoning ordinance itself. But this last language, unless expressly permitted otherwise, I'm not sure that's a legal question for Mr. Payne, and I agree with him that it's pretty nebulous to do it that way. Normally, we wouldn't be that unclear in our ordinances. I do think there are circumstances, and Mr. Stevens can explain, I do think there are circumstances where something other than where some capacity less than what would be needed is available, but there are circumstances that could potentially allow capacity to be expanded through work with the developer themselves. And Mr. Stevens can explain some of those alternatives. Now, I don't mean proffers, because proffers are kind of a taboo word, but there's potential ways to do this.
Proffers could be used for something like this. It's cash proffers that are really the problem.
That's true, right.
So you could do that, and you could do one of the things that I think you're going to see, and Mr. Stevens can give you a lot of information about this, is that we're anticipating that the regulations are going to contemplate that developers will be providing some portion of the service for these systems. And so that it's not to say that we are going to have X thousand gallons or however you measure it, and that's all you're ever going to get. The developer could come in and say, we will expand the plant if you rezone this property for whatever kind of development there is. So that kind of thing is another way to do this.
But it still remains a public water and sewer system.
Right. It would be under my concern about this is having the facility, and particularly a sewer facility, under the control of the public, because these systems are never profitable, and that means they're very difficult for a developer to maintain for a long period. And if they're not maintained properly, they're a disaster. You actually have people that end up not being able to occupy their houses. So it's a very high risk venture. So when I say I think public water and sewer systems are appropriate, that does not mean only what the county has planned to build itself in its own program. It could be supplemented by a developer or a change in the county's plan or whatever it might be. And you even could have, I don't know that Mr. Stevens may faint when I say this, but it could even be the case that the developer could come in with some sort of package plan that would be practical for the county to take over and do
it's
that.
It's entirely a possibility depending on the size of the development. The thing about the PUD is that it's got a minimum of 25 acres. Consolidate 500 acres and build one. And I think it would be a huge mistake to permanently allow anybody to have a privately owned system in one of our community planning areas. I don't know why we would bother designing public systems if you're just going to turn around and let people build their own private systems and whenever they want to. The reason I recommended we consider some out for the board was not so that we could allow somebody to build a septic system to just use forever. It was in the event that we didn't have the capacity Because I don't care about lines. The lines, they can extend 2 miles if they have to get to the system if they're building a subdivision project of this size. The capacity is going to be your main issue. And what I had in mind, and I guess it is expressly included there, was on a temporary basis, or for phase one on a temporary basis, these people might possibly be able to build a drain field to get themselves up and going. But when they get to a certain point, they will pay the connection fees and connect everything to the public system at such time as your capacity is available. I've actually successfully done that before in Faulkner County. We had a business open in the town of Marshall where we didn't have any water source capacity, but there was a water line. You know, they had could connect to the water line, but we were not allowed at that time. Again, it's, I think I mentioned it before, one of my favorite things in the world, being sarcastic, is taking over a poorly maintained private system and having to bring it up to standards. We had just taken over the previously privately owned Marshall water system. We're working on improvements. These people wanted to build a business that the county wanted to have. So the Water and Sanitation Authority, the county, and the developer got together and they approved a site plan for this project that allowed them to drill a well that they were allowed to use until such time as the water was available for them to connect. And then within 60 days or 90 days or something like that of being notified that it was available, they had to pay their fees and connect to the water system and disconnect their well from the building. They took a business decision that was what they wanted to do. You know, they probably spent $6,000-$10,000 on the well, but they used it for 2 years and they made 2 years worth of profit on their business, and then they connected to the water system as soon as they were supposed to. That's the kind of scenario that I had in mind when we were talking about permitting otherwise. So I don't know if.
Well, and I don't, I mean, I agree with you there. I'm not, you know, the idea of necessarily a sewer system being a replacement for the sewer system wasn't the objective in my comments from that standpoint. It was, we can run into a situation where we are near capacity on the sewer side. The board, the nature, the composition of the board, and whatever else is happening in the county at that point in time is such that there won't be any movement to expand the sewer systems for X many years. And so now we've spent tens of millions of dollars to bring water to the county, but we have no sewer capacity. So you immediately stopped growth at that point in time.
Well, effectively, what happens there is whoever wants to develop the PUD recognizes the situation that the county is in, that there isn't enough sewer capacity to serve their project, and they take the business decision as to whether they're willing to come to the county, and as Mr. Payne just, and perhaps Mr. Nichols mentioned a few minutes ago, fund an expansion to provide more sewer service. That is the standard way of doing business in water, for water and sewer throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. I haven't ever worked in any other state, but I know it's standard throughout the Commonwealth. For regularly for utility providers to go into contracts with developers who want to build large projects, for them to fund all or part of a water or sewer expansion to get the source that they need. The idea that you would let somebody build a septic system for something the size of a PUD, which first of all would waste an enormous amount of developable land right inside the CPA, because the size drain field you would need for 300 or 400 houses is enormous.
It could be 30 but houses. I mean,
the idea
that
you,
300 or 400,
you would
right?
permit somebody to do that without some kind of an end in sight, just it undercuts the your entire ability to have to pay for the water and sewer system.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I agree with your language of saying that you should have a mechanism in place that says as soon as sewage is available, that the person will connect to it.
I mean, it's a compliment. I can tell you one way that you can get rid of all of these issues of having to do with zoning versus this versus that and water and sewer is create an authority and turn the water and sewer over to them. And then your politics goes out of it, and they either have this capacity or they don't. They can directly deal with developers then, and the word proffer is never even mentioned, because authorities have the power to work directly with developers and effectively tell them that they need to do an upgrade in order to be able to get the service, instead of having to beat around the bush like you do under the current proffer system. So there's one advantage to having an authority over a Department of Public Utilities. You have a lot more leverage, per se. If somebody wants to build a large project and you need sewer expansion or water expansion or both in order to be able to provide them, an authority has a greater ability to get that done.
Remind me, if you would, the expansion of the sewer treatment plant at DOC can go up to what level? Or whatever.
About twice what it is now. I think it's 300, and I believe they can go to 600 without needing to do any really expensive nutrient removal. I think their nitrogen limits are something like a 12 or something right now. So basically, it's going to stay effectively at 12 because they could base it on loading. So if you double the plant capacity, your new nitrogen limit would be a 6. Or it might be a 6 now and would have to go to a 3. But in any event, you can double the capacity of the plant. As far as whether we would actually be able to do that involves coming to agreements with the Department of Corrections, the Commonwealth of Virginia, regarding who's going to pay for it, when it's going to get done, and all of that. But yes, you have the technical ability to double the capacity of that wastewater plant.
And we're hoping to be able to, potentially down the line, get agreements in place where some of the effluent would be reused by another company or another contractor so that it doesn't get dumped back into whatever water source that it goes to, in this case the Mechunk, farther downstream. That would allow us then to treat more capacity because we're still dumping less or the same amount as we were before because some of the effluent is going away for some other purpose.
And here's the pain point about building some kind of having a developer actually construct a plant of some kind of county to take over. Provided it's a large enough plant that it isn't a complete drag on you and it's designed and built in accordance with standards that county would set, that's certainly something that you can do. I mean, again, I've been involved in doing that as well in the past. Just building a complete wastewater treatment plant that might not even be on the developer's property, but you would look sited somewhere. And again, when we work on our master water and sewer plan, we'll start to take decisions as to whether we're going to try to rely solely on the prison and work with them, expand that plant to its absolute maximum, and then just kind of say, well, that's probably about all we can get sewer-wise up there, or whether we're going to try to locate a wastewater plant and go through the nutrient credit purchases or leases or whatever necessary to be able to actually build a new wastewater treatment plant up there. And we really don't know what the best option for the 25-year outlook is. But I would highly recommend right now that we work with the prison and take advantage of at least one plant upgrade there if possible. But after that, it's kind of up in the air. And we're going to probably rely on some of the large developers of large projects up there to help fund some of that.
Well, so, I mean, you brought up the point of land, and, certainly if you're talking about 300 units, the type of land that's necessary for that is, I don't know if I recall, it's like 60 acres.
Well, I don't think you're going to have a 30-unit PUD. I mean, that's the point.
Yeah, what would the benefit be of a 30-unit PUD?
PUDs are large. I mean, they're densely packed, so the ability to have any other form of sewer service besides putting into pipes and flowing it away and or pumping it somewhere else to be treated is kind of challenging.
I mean, I'd say an office building, right? I mean, that's a higher density than 6.
I thought we were talking about PUDs.
I mean, is that not
an office area?
The density doesn't apply to an office building?
No, density is a residential concept.
Okay, so you can put in an office and that's not going to limit you from that standpoint. So if I want to put an office for 100 people there.
Well, you're going to have different standards. I mean, Mr. Stevens can tell you that, but there's, I think, what's the term, residential equivalent?
Yeah, equivalent residential unit or something.
Yeah, residential equivalent unit or whatever it is. The people that know sewer systems say that an average household is going to produce X gallons of effluent a day in a residence. Businesses are very much more varied. So if you had a restaurant, for example, they use large quantities of water. A professional office would use very small quantities of water. Wouldn't use anything like a residential unit. So if you had an office building, typically an office building requires very little in the way of utilities.
Yeah, as a general rule, unless it's some kind of a facility that has people there 24 hours a day, like it's working three shifts, but a typical office where people are there 9 to 5, I mean, a 50-person office often doesn't use more than a couple of residential houses worth of water.
But we don't actually have a zoning, do we have a zoning, I guess we, on the commercial side, we have a zoning that allows for more than...
Commercial and industrial.
And industrial. We can have as to however many people we like there.
Yeah, the PUD is a...
That's going to be controlled when they come up with the site plan, because they, whoever controls the utility, whether it's the health department with a septic system or an alternative system, or I guess the health department too with the public system, are going to have standards for that. So
well, it's a DEQ if you're discharging to the river. There's two state agencies that we deal with in the water, and one of them is the health department, one of them is the DEQ. And one or the other or both of them will have something to say about the assumptions we make regarding how much each type of connection will discharge or the water side will use.
The obvious differences are what generates a lot of water use and commensurate sewer use is a kitchen. Anything involving a kitchen with food preparation and cleanup and all that kind of thing. And then bathing. You take a shower, you can brush your teeth 50 times for the water used in the shower. If you envision something like a professional office, I mean, even if you did have three shifts, it would be a very small quantity because all you'd be doing is flushing the toilet now and then and washing your hands.
Like a nursing home uses an enormous amount.
Right, or a hospital, something like that.
Data centers.
Restaurants typically use, because of low-pitched equipment and dishwashing and things like that. I mean, so a restaurant the size of, say, a Chili's, we're probably a 2-inch water meter, which is the equivalent of 8 houses worth of flow. Whereas an office building, even if it's 2 or 3 stories tall, will often get away. You'd be able to use just a single, like a 1-inch meter or a full 3/4. You do computations on the building based on the building design and the number of fixtures that are in the building, and how often or how many shifts you have and that kind of stuff to determine the type of the meter size. And typically, you base your availability fees on meter size. The larger the meter, the higher the fee. But a PUD is a planned development, and they typically combine both residential and commercial uses, and they're typically packed into an area. And I'm not aware of too many places that allow PUDs to be on anything other than a public way. In fact, the first part of that, down to the word systems in the alternate language, is verbatim from Gootsland's zoning ordinance. Their ordinance specifically says all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both public water and public sewer. And I know they don't have the largest sewage plants in the state out there, so they must be dealing with it some way. I suppose we can do some research and find out, but I honestly think in this case that it's important that anybody that's developing a PUD-type project be required to hook to the public.
So they're still not prevented from doing a special use permit if they wanted to, right?
Not in a PUD.
All right, well.
Not with this language, no.
Well, if you leave off the unless expressly permitted otherwise by the Board of Supervisors and just say they have to hook to public water and sewer, I think the answer to your question is yes. As long as the water, or in this case probably the sewer treatment plant, because we should be able to provide plenty of water in the zoning process.
Yeah, no,
as long as whatever sewer plant they build is something that the county is willing to take over and operate as a public system.
But is that a special use permit, or is that a negotiated thing beforehand?
Well, it wouldn't be because the developer is dedicating it to the county.
Well, so, I think he would still need a permit to build it because it isn't the county's until he gets it finished.
No, yeah, but he would do that. But yeah, I don't think he would need the zoning permit because the zoning permit would contemplate that it's going to be dedicated to the county. Now, obviously, he would build it before he dedicated it. But I don't think you need that.
Okay. Cool.
But the developer could come in and say, I want to put in X number of apartments, and the county says, well, we don't have enough capacity to serve that without, you know, robbing Peter to pay you or Paul.
Right.
So the developer could say, I'll build you a plant. I'll build your plant like the Palmera plant. Just,
and we'll say, you build it to these standards.
You build it to these standards, you dedicate it to us.
In this place.
And the way we ordinarily do it with a subdivision where it's bonded and he'd have to get it approved and build it and dedicate it and all that sort of stuff. And when he's done, it's a county facility. That takes care of my problem. Because my problem is not over what kind of plant you use, because guys like him tell you that. My concern is, at the end of the day, there are very, very few entities that are going to survive indefinitely. The only one practical around here is the county. So if you get 10 years into a project and something fails, what are you going to do?
Well, I mean, you've made the argument in the past that it falls on the county, but this county refused to take on a project that failed. Previously, right? So, I mean,
no, because it didn't fail. It was an economic failure, but it wasn't a physical
right.
failure.
No, he's not talking about the economic failure of the Lake Monticello system. He's talking about sewage running in roadside ditches type of physical failure of a sewer system. And in those cases, the Commonwealth of Virginia can force the county to deal with it.
And it's been done before.
What ends up happening is you either evict all the people or you fix the system.
Right, right.
And so politically, you end up fixing the system. And it ends up being astronomically expensive and basically a huge pain the entire time you're working on it, as opposed to simply requiring people to hook up to a public system in the first place and negotiating with the large developers to do expansions to your system that can benefit the county and benefit other connections and things. And I mean, it's a planning balance. And there may be some PUD developer that comes in that goes, well, no, that doesn't fit in my business plan. I'm just not going to do that. And then he doesn't. Someone else may come in and go, yeah, okay, that works for me, and I can make that work.
This is a strong effort to ensure successful development rather than just development, because if this tail is taken care of adequately and appropriately on the front end, either by negotiation with them or because we have capacity, that's what the board would have authority to do, is say yes or no to the PUD, because when you say yes, you want to make sure it was adequately supported in this basis. And that was my question to the Planning Commission, is can the Board of Supervisors say no to a PUD merely because we don't have the capacity, we don't want to provide that capacity of water or sewer? And their answer was yes. And so therefore, that's your protection on the front end. If they want to go forward, they're gonna have to find a way to help us go forward with that, but it has to be then to our standards. And then there's no problem. It's part of our system and we're gonna perpetually take care of it. But that last language, the unless expressly permitted, is really there from the staff perspective for discussion, because I'm not sure if we can necessarily do that either.
I might have recommended at the end of our meeting.
Yes, I mean, it's nice to have that out.
I was not aware that there was any, you know, and of course, you need to run that past your attorney, I guess, but I didn't know that there would be any legal problem in a zoning ordinance with having language like that.
Isn't the expressly permitted by Board Supervisors to put in a special use permit at that point?
That's not what it says.
But if it said that, then you would have that.
It might.
But I don't think we have an SUP that
addresses. And here's the counterpoint, real quickly, is, okay, so, you know, great, we say developers may want to do that, but I don't know what package plan costs, $700,000 or $800,000 or whatever the case may be, versus, you know, a drain field that might cost $125,000 or something along those lines. You know, in Zion's Crossroads, at this point in time, while, yes, the land is expensive there, it's, as we see, land is being used in a lot of different ways, the warehouses and so on, so the growth hasn't quite gotten to that point where the availability of land may not be fully developed at this point in time, so you can have somebody come in and say, I want to go ahead and put in this PUD, and, you know, I don't want to use up this full capacity, or the county doesn't want to use up that full capacity at that point in time. until such time as the county has a connection available in each case and they have to come on board. That would be the type of scenario that I would envision that would allow that process to go forward, because if you're just betting on the fact that you will have somebody come in and say, well, I want to expand your plant, great, but what if they don't? What if they aren't interested in doing that? What if they simply say, I'm not going to do that, right? So you stop.
I'm not actually betting on anything. I'm saying if you want to build, you're going to need to expand our plan.
And if they say we're not going to do that,
that's fine.
If they say we're not going to do that, and that's the response that we get from other people, then you end up in a position where we've made this investment in water, we have a large capacity of water, but now the board has to make a decision as to whether
I will promise you somebody else will come along to use that capacity.
The problem with this is, and we really don't want a 300 unit housing subdivision in the near future anyway.
Well, again, everybody assumes it's 300 units, but it doesn't have to be 300 units. It could be 50.
But why would they do a PUD for 50?
Well, that's the whole point that I was making.
What advantage would there be?
I want to build an office building with rentals on top. Right?
The problem with it is, with this is this, and I speak, you know, from my 40-some years experience around development, because I've been on both sides. And some developers will come in and say, we want to put this together, we're going to throw this out and make it work and start it, and we're going to sell these houses and get out of Dodge. The responsible developer is going to come in and say, I've got a plan so that this thing gets done right, so that when the next time it comes up, my company's reputation is that we produce a quality product. That's what a responsible developer says. And I can tell you that I've had many cases on both sides where the question came up, the staff was saying, not necessarily our staff, but the, whatever the locality staff is, we want you to do X, Y, Z. And I've heard developers say, we don't want to do X, Y, Z because that's not as good as A, B, C. We want to do A, B, C. I remember the first time I heard that, I was representing a county and the staff was sitting there listening to that and their jaws dropped open because the developer was saying, I don't want to do what you've said, not because it costs too much, but because it doesn't work as well. The other one is more expensive, but it works better. And in the long run, for any responsible developer, that's the better practice, because he's testing his reputation when he builds the thing out, and he needs to have the plan so that he knows if he invests X dollars, he's going to get a return of Y. And believe me, when a developer comes in and does something, let's just use the term halfway, he can get by. But sooner or later, it's going to be a problem. And it's almost guaranteed that it's going to be the county's problem. But the developer then is going to suffer for that the next project he comes up with.
Sure.
So what you're presupposing, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. In most cases, my reaction would be, fine, if you're not willing to do a development that's going to work indefinitely for the foreseeable future, then we'll wait for the next guy. Because Mr. Stevens is right. If you have an area that's attractive for users, there's not going to be any limit on the demand. I mean, it may not be there today, but over time, there's going to be plenty of people that want to come in and do these things.
My big concern still falls in terms of timing. You know, I mean, we want to make sure the momentum is kept up. And given this county's sort of reluctance to invest in big infrastructure projects in tradition, I definitely can see where we are creating a limiting factor for ourselves and for people looking to come to this county by attaching the word sewer to public water. To me, that's a huge concern.
But this is only for PUDs.
I understand that, but that's probably...
They need both the services, though.
They do.
So you need to attach the word sewer to it, or people are going to wonder where their sewer is supposed to go.
But if the issue is, if no public sewer is available,
then they make it available.
Then if they are in a CPA, they will help us build it, or they won't build. That's the whole point. I don't understand why we would even bother having community planning areas if we're not going to follow our plan inside.
Well, because, I mean, I'm just saying, because what happens is, you know, we're facing a $7 million build or something like that, and it's going to take 2.5 or 3 years for it to happen. And we're at capacity at that point in time, so we've lost some momentum. That's the kind of situation that worries me about the limitation we have in place right now.
I haven't stopped planning for the water and sewer.
I'm not arguing your plans, but
it seems like you think that we've done this, we've got 75,000 or 125, and we just, oh, that's it, now we're done.
You may not be done, but the board still has to approve it, right?
Right, but the board has to approve the PUD to begin with.
Right. No, I understand.
And if the board's not going to get help building it, then why would the board just automatically commit to building it themselves if a developer wants to come in and develop it? If somebody's going to do a PUD, they're going to contribute.
It has to be hand in hand with the developers and the county. You can't go out and build 1 million gallons worth of capacity for both water and sewer and then sit around waiting for people to come to it. You build what you can build and you start to sell it out, and when you get close to the capacity, you start working with people to expand the system. The people who come on first, they can just pay their availability fees and hook up, and they're fat and happy, and then we're making money both in taxes and hopefully on the water and sewer side, at least gaining most of our expenses back. And then when it's time for an expansion, you always have that one project that comes in that's going to put you over the top of your capacity allocation. That's the guy that has to come in and start talking about helping to fund an expansion in lieu of just paying availability fees. I've been doing that my entire career. That's how it works. But if you have an out for people, trust me, if you have an out for people to try to build a ramshackle, privately run system, they will take it if you let them.
Somebody will take it.
We've talked about reputation.
Yeah, not all of them.
Your reputation sure will.
I would rather have tell them to just go away and have somebody build a private system.
We seem to have a bias that says anybody who builds a sewer system is going to create a lousy sewer system. The only people that can do a sewer system properly
is
the county.
That's pretty much the case. Yes, sir.
I agree with you. That's my experience.
It's not they can't build a good one to begin with. It's the long-term maintenance.
I have 30 years of experience doing this, and that is pretty much the case. There are very, very few. Actually, it isn't even private. The military does a pretty good job of running wastewater treatment plants. They're not private. But
that's a governmental entity. It's like same issue.
It's only because our feet to the fire because we have to as a public entity.
They neglect the maintenance. They run the thing in the ground, and then they look for the public to come out and bail them out. And if you allow people to build private systems to serve these PUDs, then it'll probably happen after I've retired, but somewhere down the line, my predecessor or my successor or his successor is going to be dealing with taking over something that's worthless and been run into the ground, but you're going to be sitting there with somebody going, oh, well, I want you to pay me $1 million for it.
During the 90s and early 2000s boom, we had lots of developers coming in and want to do lots of things, and growth was expanding and things. And what we got left with when anything crashed was a whole lot of trouble in our hands. And where did all those residents turn to? They didn't turn to the developer because the developer wasn't even listening. They turned to the county. Now, the county didn't have to put up thousands and thousands and millions of dollars to fix it, but we did a lot of staff time, some measure of thousands of dollars that the board did support several of those subdivisions, and there's still more out there to do that. And that's a tiny
roads.
Scale.
If you start
compared to this would be.
The roads are easy.
Yes.
Because the worst that happens with the roads is the complaint about beating up your car and stuff like that, but you can still get in your house. As soon as you get into a system where you can't flush the toilet, that means you can't live in that house. And I've seen that instance in any number of times, seen it happen, and people are desperate because it's not like, well, I can, you know, I need to replace my water main and I'm all right, or my sewer main and I'm okay. He can't do that because no individual can do that. He's got to go to this joint facility. If you got a septic system, you can do it. It's expensive, but but that's a private system.
So, again, we're talking about the CPA zone, we're talking about growth, we're talking about expanding to that growth, we're just providing ourselves a tool that has that flexibility. In this case, we're a developer to go in and say, put in a drip field to begin with, right? County expands, doesn't expand, whatever the case may be. It fails, at that point in time, and we have capacity available, they're going to connect to it. So either we're going to
What if it fails and we don't have capacity available yet?
Well, because that to me implies that the county hasn't been doing its job.
Oh, absolutely not.
What if it fails?
Oh, no. If the Board of Supervisors allows that developer to build this development and allows them to build a drain field that will support that development, and so therefore they've got support, and we don't expand our plant, and now that fails, now all of a sudden it's County of Flavanna's responsibility?
In this sense, right? In this sense that, you know, if the county is planning ahead, right? Okay, and so in this case, we currently have 125,000 gallons. I would think by the time 75,000 gallons is allocated, we would already be well in the process of trying to expand that plant, I would think.
We
would always have a certain amount of capacity reserved to begin with. And at that point in time, were we having that reserve capacity, you know, and this again is a tool that's allowing for a type of system to go in advance of the sewage becoming available. But once the sewage is available, then you have to connect to it.
Well, that brings up my legal issue,
and that is,
how do you determine which one you're going to allow to do that?
Right. And I would be hard pressed to find a reputable developer that's big enough, solvent enough, and has a good enough reputation to build a large PUD project in our county that we would actually approve, that you all would actually approve and recommend, I mean, the Planning Commission recommend and you all would approve, that wouldn't be willing to talk water and sewer, because they know that a PUD is going to require public water and
but
sewer.
But there's something between the large and what the zoning allows, right?
No,
all assuming it's going to be 300 or 400 or whatever the number.
Well, but that's not
my question. My question,
PUD that's much smaller.
That's not
yes,
my question.
Why?
My question
why
is,
because you have the flexibility.
Right? My question is, if you're going to allow some developers to come in, you're going to require some of them to have public systems and allow others not to have public systems, what is the standard for making that decision?
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
That's the Sinclair case.
We have to take that kind of chance.
If you had a larger development, residential development, you probably do a major subdivision rather than PUD.
Exactly. The PUD is a specific tool that a specific type of developer is going to want to use, and it is going to be big. You're not going to find somebody coming in here wanting to build a 50-unit PUD.
Yeah, that's
because
when
they're going to build a conventional subdivision or a conventional commercial development or split, get some rezonings, and fake it. A PUD is a planned community.
So
it's pretty much like another Lake Monticello, if you want to put it that way.
Well, I mean, if I was
only with
some
community, commercial stuff added.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but maybe I don't understand it. But let's say I build a five-story building. The first story is reserved for commercial purposes. The rest is available for housing at that point in time. Which zoning would that fall into right now?
It may or may not fall under anything we've got.
Yeah.
Well, that's my point. We don't have some zoning that supports that.
Oh, right? There are plenty of zones that we don't have.
Right, but that's...
So are you going to waste 25 acres of land to build that one building?
Did we clarify that it was 25 acres?
Because
last time...
It was 25 acres.
There was some discussion about that.
And there's no minimum area requirement in the UDA area.
Not in the UDA, right.
Not in the UDA.
But we do have R3, which is our master plan zoning, which allows some... limited mixed use and PUD, and that's.
But R3 is only up to 6 per acre, right?
I believe so.
Right. Yeah. That's. I mean, to me, it's just the density in relation. We have a gap there, right?
Density issues. Our ordinance definitely has a deficit of dense residential zoning.
But we're not a city.
No, we're not. And I remember one time years ago, I had a conversation with the county attorney in Arlington County. I was representing Albemarle. And I said, yeah, we have this high density residential district that's 15 units an acre. And he laughed. And he said, that's a low density district for us. We have these 2.96 units an acre, but we are not downtown Richmond. Now maybe we should have areas that allow multifamily development at some reasonable, what I would call medium density. Maybe we should.
But that's a separate question from this.
Right. But the point is, if you're going to have it, the one thing you have to ensure you absolutely have a non-delegable duty to the public to ensure that whatever development there is safe and protects the health, safety, and welfare of the residents. And I mean, the residents of the development and people outside. And the worst possible thing you can do is have a major sewer failure. And I'm not talking about it doesn't make money. I'm talking about, as he said, the sewage running down.
So you require the bonding, you require them to have a maintenance contract that does that. That's the kind
you can't do that.
We required bonding for all those roads. Because the bonds were there and the judge said it's gone and we moved on and they went out of bank, they went bankrupt. There's lots of those things that were just taken off the table. And whether we did a good enough job in there or not, regardless, you don't want to be in the same position with something that's massively larger.
But there's a difference between bonding and maintenance fees, if you will, because bonding has a definite endpoint. You developer, are going to have to complete this facility, whatever it is, by a certain date.
And they just tightened those rules up, too.
Yeah, we did. We have now tightened them up. But that's not the same thing as saying, we're going to come in once a year and check this, make sure it's working.
No, I think the example that we were given last time was that the companies that there are now companies when they put in drip field systems where they actually, maintain on an annual basis.
They
that's
do.
Part of their job is they have to do that. And so for that to be approved in this private system as a temporary system while capacity is achieved, and that's kind of the language I'm thinking, right? And then at that point in time, they would have this type of contract in place so that we're not sitting there in a situation where have we not built the capacity already and it's failed, then it falls on them. If we have the capacity and we want them to come on and it's not failed, then we make them come on, right? That's to me, this is just a tool. And it's about the density, and it's also about the tool.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding you, but if what you're saying is developer comes in and says, I want to put in units, 100 units, 300 units, whatever it is. I want to put that in, and the county says to him, you can't do that because we don't have adequate sewer capacity. Mm-hmm. Then the developer comes in and says, I don't need that. I've got a system. I'll put my system in, and I'll have my company that I contract with to service that system until you get capacity. Well, the first thing is all you're doing then is kicking the can down the road because your plan for expanding the plant is now behind, because not only are you going to have to plan for the new development that's coming on, but for the development you've already let come on.
And you've left a political decision with a future board.
But the other thing is,
I mean, that's the problem.
I mean, that's my concern about
what are you going to do when the company that maintains the drip system fails for whatever reason? And I can tell you right now, my partner has a case right now in Prince William County where exactly that same thing happened. It's pending right now. And in this case, it's money, it's litigation. But what does the poor person do that now can't occupy his house? Because the people he contracted with to fix this thing, keep it running, went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. What does he do? The only entity you can really rely on is a governmental entity. And in this case, Mr. Stevens made reference to the military. The military is obviously well-equipped to do that. Mm-hmm. And the only other entity you really got are local governments and their authorities and things like that, but they're related.
Okay.
How about we solve this?
Yeah, I think we
and just get rid of the PUD ordinance and not allow PUDs at all. Since we're only allowed in the Zion Crossroads CPA, why even allow it? That takes away this problem, because everything else is subject to the board's consideration. And a PUD, if some developer is going to come in and do a PUD along the Zion Crossroads corridor, it's going to be a big project, and they're going to have to find, and they know they have to find a way to provide adequate stuff. I understand your position on this, but this allowing them to have a temporary solution and then relying on a political decision of a future board that didn't plan for expansion for that is more dangerous than requiring it up front and missing the possibility of PUD. But if the requiring public water and sewer is the big problem, The only place we require that is in a PUD right now. So take the PUD requirement away. Take it out as an option in our toolkit. Because frankly, I'm not sure what benefit Nestle gives us.
Well, if they're allowed on such small parcels, I did not know.
Which seems kind of silly anyway.
I mean, honest to God, in Culpeper County, for instance, the minimum size for a PUD is 200 acres. They are, the PUDs in general, their concept was intended to be large planned developments. I had no idea, I guess I should have read, but I did not know that our ordinance didn't have a
minimum size. But that's in the size of the UDA, it's zero.
I imagine.
Well, that's what I said. I didn't know that we don't have a minimum in the UDAs. It's pointless to have an ordinance like that.
It's a neighborhood model commercial development. The city of Charlottesville uses PUDs with very small parcels, but in effect, they're not really PUDs. They're more like cluster residential development than they are like PUDs in the sense we're using the word.
But you said the R3 has some commercial development.
Yeah.
It seems to me like you could use an R3 zoning instead of a PUD to accomplish that on a small property.
Yes, but that's something else we can address.
Right.
That's something you probably should address. But that's not this issue.
Well, can we, I know we've had a lot of good discussion, can we go do the public hearing and then come back and give some instructions on what we want to do with this?
You have to do the public hearing before you do that.
So I think it's time for us to do the public hearing, and anyone who would like to speak on the PUD ordinance, and you've heard all the discussion up here, please come to the podium and give your name and address, and you speak to the board, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone would like to speak to us about the PUD?
I'm not sure if people understand a PUD because it's complicated.
People are listening intensely.
There's no developers in the audience.
I think we have some questions or some ideas to help us out, right? No. Okay. So I don't have anyone, so we will close the public hearing and we'll come back to the board, and it sounds to me that we're not ready for the motion. We need we need to give the planning people some instructions. So what are we looking for? What do we want to do?
Well, I mean, if to me as a tool, we have this temporary system and staff and public's, there's a phrasing that makes sense there. To me, it's an important piece of flexibility. I understand, all the fear. I do get that, but
the real
I'm equally fearful of a situation where we aren't making investments into expanding the sewer capacity for any number of reasons.
But you can't. You all have said this before. You can't expect the future board to do what you think needs to be done today, and that's the approach here. If you're trying to give yourself an out, you're then expecting that the future board, when you're no longer on the board, is going to do the right thing as you see it today, and that's more risky than making a requirement. You have to have this, because either we're going to expand because we think it's right and appropriate to do, or the developer's going to help pay to expand, and we're going to get the same standard plan.
Changing a lot of economics, so I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know what a package plan costs.
I don't think with a PUD, Mr. O'Brien.
The example being, and I believe our ordinance doesn't really allow that in R3 or any other format because we don't have these other tools. And sure, maybe it's changing and putting in different zoning types in order to do that. But for example, the Stonefield type of thing,
right. That
is a neighborhood thing. I don't think we have zoning for that available, and that isn't probably on more than about 30 or 40 acres of land to begin with, or an office building that has, homes on top, or not homes, apartments on top of it. I don't think we have anything that accommodates that.
Well, Stonefield is really, there's nothing magical about Stonefield other than the fact that they don't know how to design the drainage, but other than that, the problems with Stonefield are addressed by the fact that the city and the county, because both of them were involved with Stonefield, even though it's in the county, those two entities have available utilities. You never, ever have a discussion with something like Stonefield of using anything other than public water and sewer.
And I get that, and I'm not saying I don't want them to eventually use public sewer.
Well, right? Okay, but that's another thing that I think you need to recognize as a problem, because the developer comes in and says, well, you know, I want to get this up and running, and we'll put this plant in, and it's really good. You know, it's all an engineer system, and we got this contractor, they'll maintain it, et cetera, et cetera. Who's going to decide when he's got to turn it over, and who's going to enforce it?
Okay, can't that be in our ordinance? Is that part of it?
That didn't answer my second question, and that is, who's going to enforce it?
Well, I mean, that's the county's responsibility.
But you're no longer on the board.
Well, no, but
the board's changed
even
over.
Even if it is.
No, but if the ordinance says, let's say, for example, it says, temporary sewer systems privately maintained will be allowed for a period of 5 years while capacity is expanded, or something like that.
Okay. Who's going to expand capacity then?
Yeah.
Right. So if the county doesn't expand capacity, then that's a failure of the county's part.
No.
Why not? Why not? Because if the growth is there.
Failure was the board approving that to begin with, and they weren't going to expand capacity.
The growth was there, okay. We didn't spend all this money to bring in a lot of water to then just choke it down. We did those ROI models.
Right,
we know what 125,000 of sewer does. So if we don't expand our sewer capacity, you know, we're not going to have the expected growth and the expected rate of return, right? That's, you know, that we know. It's great to start with this initial DOC plan, but we haven't negotiated with the DOC as to how we can expand. We haven't negotiated as to how it can be paid for. We haven't spoken to Louise as to whether or not they would sell us additional capacity. And
sure, we've done all of those things.
For sewer, we have, but yes. Not since.
Both Louisa and with DOC and the State Department of Corrections.
So we know that they'll allow us to expand it.
No, we don't have a contract signed, but we've already talked to them about how that's going to happen, how we can do that, how we can partner on it. They've already requested us to start thinking that way so that we can provide capacity and take over and support them.
Okay.
And the same models happened in Goochland County and Goochland and Powhatan. Those discussions have been ongoing for the last 3 years. I mean, as Wayne said, we're planning this water and sewer system for decades from now. That's why there's four phases in the preliminary engineering report.
Which is terrific, right? And so in essence, all I'm saying is we're providing, phrased correctly,
mm-hmm.
We are providing a vehicle under which, while capacity is being addressed,
right.
We're not stalling the project. That's all I'm really trying to say. I don't know the best way to say it. I'm not smart enough to say this is how it's going to happen.
I understand
but
clearly.
I think as a tool, that's an important thing.
I don't disagree with you in theory. The problem is, how do you make it work? And I say that from a perspective of 40-some years in this industry. And the problem with it is, it's kind of like the difference between being around somebody that's got the common cold. You're probably going to catch cold, but it's not a big deal because you'll get over it in a few days. What happens if you're exposed to something that's a little more serious, like HIV, you're probably not going to get it, but if you do, you're dead. And what I'm saying to you is that if the developer comes in and says, I want to do this on a temporary basis and we'll get it going and then we'll turn it over and everything will be fine, what happens if something goes wrong? And the answer is it's a catastrophe.
And
the
to your
requirement
point,
is that they have to maintain insurance. I mean, you could have any number of things on those.
But that's failed time after time after time in the past. In counties, upturns, downturns, trying to track that, maintain that, and ensure that they maintain their support for that system for those residents and businesses that they said they would. And you're then follow up saying, well, then 5 years from now, if the county hasn't expanded, hasn't built, well, then that's the county's fault. You're still stuck with the problem. Now what do you do?
Now the county has made the decision not to make the investment. Now they have a problem that's created because of the failure.
And what do they do if they don't have the money? I mean, so that's why you're required on the front end for big things.
That's not a frivolous question. I ran into this in Franklin County, where they had a developer that had this very nice multi-use development and all this sort of thing. And guess what? He went bankrupt. So all the agreements he had with the county were simply unenforceable.
That's right.
Because
that's
the bankruptcy court
we
avoided
need to be in control.
You suggested we may need to eliminate the PUD?
Well, that would be one. The discussion tonight, forget the zoning discussion and the density discussion. That's a whole separate discussion, and I think that's important, and I agree with the county attorney. And I'm not any kind of, these guys are zoning experts. They can help you with that. We definitely need to look at that, especially as we're continuing to grow in our corridor. But that doesn't apply to this. If a PUD requirement went away, we're only allowing right now a PUD in the Zion Crossroads CPA, and there's only certain times you would even allow it. In this case, there's no reason not to leave PUD there. It's a tool. But if you're going to leave it there, you better commit to public water and sewer systems. If you don't want to comply with that, then use other types of zoning, change the density, and just get rid of PUD altogether, because you're only allowing it in just Zion CPA anyway. And I understand you said you might want to allow it in other places.
Why are we eliminating, why would we even think about eliminating tools?
I don't think county administrators are recommending that you do that.
No, I know, but
that was contemplated during the Secret Amber Calder Community Commission discussions with the comprehensive plan.
Right.
It was decided that if a limited tool may be more appropriate use for the PUD than having it expansive as it is now. That's where the recommendation came to limit the Zion's Crossroads.
Madam Chairman, if it helps the board, my recommendation would be to use the alternate amended language down to the word right. systems, and then delete everything, including the second red phrase.
Right.
Delete everything thereafter.
How's that different than the first one?
Well, the language is matched up better
to the slightly different
definition, to the zoning ordinance definition.
Mr. Stevens found that the first wording to be ambiguous. I don't know that I think it is. The advantage of the second system is that it tracks a defined term, that is public water and sewer system. That's a defined term.
That's based on the definition of the zoning ordinance.
Well, I would ask that we table this and not vote on it right now so that you guys can chew on it a little bit more and everybody else can chew on it.
We need to.
You all can do what you want. The staff's already decided.
Right.
As far as a recommendation.
Yes. But
we'll follow whichever way you want
to
go.
We need to let the planning community know what's our real concern, the questions, what information they can bring back to us, or we just want to sit and continue to just discuss over and over. I mean,
that's the point, is what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Because
great
question. So why don't we invite, five or six developers to come talk to us about that and see what they say.
I think we should move on with this and vote on it tonight. I would approve it with public water and public sewer systems.
And to stop existence.
Yes.
I mean, you can suggest that.
What I think may happen up in this particular area, I expect to see more industry than residential. I expect people to, because that's the way it's going now. We're getting more inquiries about industry, and there's plenty of places to develop outside of that area. Mm-hmm. Okay. In like major subdivision. And,
right,
and then you can have your private,
right.
Wells and septics for each lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a mixture of things that it's just going to be all industry there. It's just not likely to be the case, but.
So is it very clear about what your concern is? Is the planning commission?
Oh, we clearly understand what he's asking and saying.
Right.
Frame it in a simple way. Have this, require public water and sewer, but if this builder wants to build this PUD now, and we don't have capacity yet, give them the ability to put in a temporary system and temporarily have it there until capacity is expanded. And frankly, I like that kind of concept, but what I want is I want to go directly to reliable, no kidding, public water and sewer by them contributing in the expansion now. If they want to do it now, they'll contribute now. But that's
again, that's where I would invite a couple of people to talk about it.
I don't know too many big developers in our area that wouldn't just fall in line with that. They know this is what the standard is around the Commonwealth.
And so
there are some smaller developers around that would gladly find a quick, cheap, different alternative. That's what happened over the last 10 years, and that's what we were left with, these quick, cheap solutions that then got dumped in our lap. And it was the small developers, the ones who shouldn't be taking on the big projects anyway, that this county allowed to do those things, but then when they went bankrupt, we didn't have a choice.
Right.
The court's already decided.
And
so we were stuck.
And
as Mr. Payne said, roads are easy.
Do we have one person, economic development person, who can come and talk to us about it that would be very knowledgeable of PUDs?
Well, we could bring 10 experts in if you want.
Yeah.
It's up to you. But they're gonna.
What do you think?
They're gonna tell you the same things.
So what do you all, do you want someone to come in or do you want to
Are they going to see it from the perspective that we see it from? That's another thing. You know, the direction of the developer going in might not be good for us. That's the problem.
Right.
Down the road.
Okay. So.
Well, let's sum this. We brought five big developers in, and all five of them came in and said, you know, we're never going to build a PUD in Flavanna County if we have to hook up to public water and sewer systems and ask to rely on you to have it there. What are you going to do then?
Then take PUD out.
Right, that's right. I mean, you're just going to get rid of it. I mean, so you're either going to require big developments to have public water and sewer reasonably on the front end, and they're going to contribute to it, or you're not going to have a PUD. And the major subdivisions in R3 or whatever area zoning would get you there. Staff has kind of told you what we think. We'll do whatever you request, bring in whoever you want, and we can do it in a timely manner.
So you don't think we should just go ahead and vote on this tonight?
My recommendation is you go ahead and adopt it.
Yeah, mine too, but that's the board's decision. We'll do whatever you say you want. I think this is reasonable already. Unless expressly permitted otherwise by the Board of Supervisors, was a tag Mr. Stevens and I talked about this afternoon and put on there and hadn't vetted, but it was for discussion tonight because it's the kind of the out that we had talked about.
Okay.
I don't know what's legal.
Let's go ahead and get the motion.
If I make the motion,
you
read this,
and
then change it to...
No, what I would suggest you do is do two motions, one dealing with the language of 22.14.13. That's the public water and sewer language. And then once you get a decision on that, then come back and adopt this, the big motion, which incorporates this
all. All right. So we go back to the language where we're going to stop at systems. Is that what we're talking about?
So, what I can do is amend Chapter 22, Article 14, just get it down with just the...
No, I wouldn't do that. Go ahead and go back to the 22.14.13.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you're doing it on me.
Well, let me pull up the actual file and it'll be easier to edit it that way.
Wrong one.
ZTA.
Right.
Okay.
What I would recommend is the language for 22.14-13 would be all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both public water and public sewer systems, period.
I move that all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both public water and public sewer systems.
Okay, we have a second.
Which is an amendment to Section 22, TAC 14, TAC 13.
Okay.
Which is an amendment to...
Let me give it a shot at wording the motion for you. I move that Section 22-14-13 be amended to read as follows: all uses and structures within a PUD district shall be served by both public water and public sewer systems. Period.
As stated.
As stated.
Just want to incorporate my statement.
Just say as stated.
Okay. We have a motion.
Mr. Payne just said.
Correct.
Yes.
What he said.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Nay.
Chair votes aye.
I'm gonna mark that one.
All right. And now the second motion.
Again, I would like to put that in there. Not exclude.
Pardon me, sir?
I'd like to keep Rydena in there, not exclude Rydena.
If you wanna say must be located.
Well, that's separate one. That's 2214-1. So you just did the 313. That was just about PUDs. When you do the motion for 2214-1, you can state that.
The comprehensive plan just states within Zion Crossroads.
Right. You'd have to change
the comp plan as well. Yeah.
You'd have to change the comp.
Okay. Can I read that language?
So can they go to move?
Take out.
Go right to that one?
I don't want to make the motion to include Rydena.
Well, in that case, I think all you need to do is, since you already adjusted the language for 2214-13.
Exclude that.
No, leave it in there. And just say, I move the Board of Supervisors approve ZTA 17:02, an amendment to accompanying resolution, et cetera, for these subsections 2214-1, 6, 7, 8, 12, and 13, parentheses, as amended, thereby making Levanna County zoning ordinance, et cetera.
Okay.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve CTA 1702, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Levanna County zoning ordinance, entitled an ordinance to amend Chapter 22, Article 14 of the Levanna County Code by certain amendments to sections and subsections 22-14-1, 22-14-6, 22-14-7, 22-14-8, 22-14-12, 22-14-13, as amended. Thereof, amending the Levanna County zoning ordinance to conform with the 2015 Comprehensive Plan implementation goals and strategies.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye. Yeah.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. All right. Thank you.
So, Kelly, just make sure we pick up I've marked the changes in here, so it should stay okay.
Okay, so next we have ZTA 17:04, Industrial General Ordinance. Mr. Newman.
Sorry.
This is a public purpose of this amendment is to provide flexibility in building design as to building height and yard requirements for purposes of promoting orderly development and economic development. We've changed it so that when permitted uses adjoin I-1 or I-2 districts, there should be no minimum side yard requirements. If they adjoin the agricultural, any residential, or PUDs, or B-1 or C-1 districts, the minimum yard requirement will be at least 50 feet. And also, the foregoing notwithstanding, there should be no minimum side yard requirement for any property adjacent to one owned by the Virginia Department of Corrections. The reason for this last change is because we have lots of Industrial 1 and Industrial 2 properties located around the women's prison, which is currently zoned A1, which means it has those 50-foot yard requirements kick in, which limits the amount of building space developers have. By doing this, very narrowly tailoring it to exclude the Virginia Department of Corrections, that gives folks who have industrial property near the prison more room to develop on. We've gone ahead also and upgraded the proposed height of buildings from a limit of 45 feet up to at least 70 feet, and any structure seeking to exceed the height of 70 feet would have to get a special use permit, which would go before the board. So we've gone ahead and got rid of the yard restrictions for those I-2 properties that are adjacent to the women's prison. We've increased the building height from 45 to 70 feet, and there's a section in there that granted certain buildings the ability to go up to at least 60 feet in height, but that's now null and void since all structures can go to 70. And the Planning Commission recommended approval 3-0 at their meeting last Tuesday. Member Lev's resolution motion. Here to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Newman? If not, we have someone next.
Public hearing.
Oh. Public hearing. Anyone would like to speak to ZTA 17:04, Industrial General Ordinance? If so, come to the board, give your name and address, and have 5 minutes to speak. Okay, I'll close the public hearing. Come back to the board.
Any discussion or?
Any discussion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve ZTA 1704, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Savannah County Zoning Court zoning ordinance to amend Chapter 22, Article 12 of the Savannah County Code by certain amendments to sections and subsections 22-12-6, 22-12-7, thereof amending the Savannah County zoning ordinance. The public purpose of these amendments is to provide flexibility in building design as to building height and yard requirements for purposes of promoting orderly development and economic development.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Are all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Action matters, O is deferred.
Well, let me, you're going to defer the banking services, and I looked over that pretty well. There's a timeline on that of 90 days, the contract is, and actually the original one went back to mid last year on this. And I'm sort of wondering why we're skipping this, and it certainly appears to me that we're losing about $7,000 a year by not having this contract as compared to 0.25% as compared to 95%. So why are we skipping this?
Mr. Weaver, there were some issues with BB&T on some legal issues, and Christina and I discussed those yesterday, and we're still waiting for BB&T's attorney to get back to Christina with those. And we just felt that under the circumstances, we wanted everything to be right before we presented this to the board.
So they're going to extend the contract over the 90 days and continue to give us the point?
Yes.
0.65, I guess it is.
There was an issue. I don't know, Mr. Payne, if Christina has talked to you about it.
Yeah.
But I did not feel comfortable going forward with BB&T without their answers to some of the legal questions to be sure that we're totally protected as a county. And Christina did have some questions about it.
But this was presented to us mid last year, was it not? It stays.
No.
Well, yeah, there's a...
No, sir, this is the...
This is the first time it came
to the board.
Yes, this is a new one.
We've been working on it for a number of months, but it never came to the board before.
No, it never came to the board before.
No.
Oh, and the 0.25 and the 0.69,
Let's see.
That's brand new.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's brand new.
Back here.
We never had that.
Now, we did have some negotiations.
5-year contract, page 343, maintenance fee, good for 90 days. kind of received 0.63%. It expires...
This is just BB&T's proposal in response to our request for proposals. This is the one that was selected, but that their terms are still good. We're just trying to settle some final love.
But what I'm saying is they made this proposal last year.
But not to you.
It to you all or to the staff.
All right, but their proposal and their numbers are still good.
Yes.
But why has it taken a year?
It hasn't taken a year. I think we got it in October.
The first letter did back. It was mid last year.
That was them coming to us.
Yes.
It was their proposal.
Yes.
We never did an RFP.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I guess so. Eric, can you cover the timeline and from when we started initially?
I mean, it's in here. I just can't find it. You have a whole 200 pages here now. But it's in here.
January, wasn't it?
January. And we just met with them in April, May, the second time.
See, what they said is the BB&T approached us before we did the RFP.
Yes.
And then...
Well, but unsolicited, though.
Right. Yeah, unsolicited.
We couldn't.
And then we did the RFP.
That's their dates on that.
Right. Proposal with two other people.
Yes, that is correct.
Right.
Commercial Bank Services Agreement, September 1st, 2016. BB&T, this is what I'm talking about.
Right. That was before, those are documents they gave us with their dates on them.
Right.
But that was before the request for proposals was formally put on the street, I think in January, just for the summer January. And so from January through now, what we've been doing is put the RFP out, accept proposals, review and vet the proposals, select the best offer, and then negotiate with that best offer, and now it's coming to you. But there are still some final contract language that Ms. Hoffman in Fred's office wants to iron out. So those dates on there are BB&T dates, but not in response to the request for proposals. Right. They didn't start till January.
So yeah, because they've given you 90 days and it expires at the end of this month.
It's not going to expire.
Well, it says so.
Their terms will continue. That's part of what we're working on. Those terms will not, they may get better.
Well, I hope so, because the interest rates ought to be going up and we ought to get a better rate.
Maybe.
But because we haven't done anything back then, and again, you know, you negotiate, you know, the longer we wait, every 12 months we're losing $7,000 because if we use the figure that they have in here, because of the charges and the differences in what we're going to get on a flow of approximately $2 million.
Right, except that this contract is not ready for Board of Supervisors consideration.
And I just wondered why the deadline was right on top of us, and then we're,
Dennis,
you know.
Mr. Payne, is it my understanding with Christina that we could probably have this in July?
I think that's what she's counting
on. Yeah, that's what she's counting on, what we're counting on.
But it doesn't have anything like that in here, though.
There's some peculiar things going on here.
Yes.
BB&T takes the position they can't agree to certain of our terms because those things that they're identifying are not consistent with federal banking regulations as they read them. Now, that may or may not be true. If it is true, maybe we can negotiate that. One of the things that they wanted to do was to hire outside counsel for them that we would pay for. And I can tell you right now, that didn't start in my office. I mean, didn't start in the same.
Right, but what I'm saying is the contract was done 90 days ago, and here we are at the end of the 90 days.
Well,
takes time.
If we don't work these things out, then they didn't comply with the RFP.
Yeah. Okay, but that's what I wanted to bring out now, why this is being stopped before the
legal issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm always frustrated with the pace of government contracting. I mean, always. But we don't set the laws, unfortunately. We just have to follow them. In this case, why didn't we do a banking, you know, RFP 6 years ago?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
No, I understand. But in this case, what we're doing is there is finally an RFP out there. We're working on that. Mrs. Lenher and her staff and finance have gone through and vetted this, and we're in the final throes of negotiating an agreement with the best offer that came in.
Right.
There are some legal language things that are still being discussed, and while it was on the agenda tonight because we were hoped to be done, it's not done, and therefore you can't consider approving that because you don't have a legally reasonable contract yet. And it's just the matter of time that it takes to do that, unfortunately. And I'd love to see the interest rates go up, and, you know,
we would too.
Maybe they will the next time we negotiate, but they are what they are
now. So the 0.63 might very well by the time we get through with it.
If I remember correctly, when they gave us the proposal, it was 0.58, and
yes,
we negotiated. 0.63,
yeah.
Because they would adjust their expenses. They said they could, so we...
Well, they did adjust their expenses, I guess.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But that's part of the negotiation process.
Right.
But now we're not down to the negotiation. We're down to the legal language.
The legal document.
And if you could get Mr. Payne's office to work a lot faster.
You think we could?
And everybody to agree with him all the time, this would be a snap, but it's never going to be like that.
He's got
his job to do, and the other folks have their job to do. It's just the way it is.
Let me just give you some perspective on it. Christina was on vacation, and she was working on these projects every day when she was at the beach.
Right.
So this is not a question if it's been sitting around, nobody's been paying attention to.
No, not at all.
Now, in some cases,
Well, you understand that there was no explanation. We just pulled it all at once, and then when I looked at all these things.
I know, but it didn't get pulled till this morning.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though.
So tonight, now we're explaining to you why I got pulled, because it's legal language. It's just not ready for you to approve.
We're explaining.
But I still think that Mr. Weaver and this contract, that's not a contract. They gave us an unsolicited proposal. Yeah, we got that. We didn't ask for it. And then you put out the RFP, and then they came back. And this was not binding at all. I mean, it was just information, right?
Right, until this contract that Christina is working on with BB&T.
Yeah.
This is the basis for a negotiation, which hopefully will result in a contract.
If the September 16th date said January 28th, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion, because it was after the RFP. They just have some documents there that have old dates on it, because it's part of their stock of stuff. But
how do I know that?
You didn't before, you do now.
Yeah.
You didn't before, and you didn't give us a chance to explain why.
Well, but you weren't going to explain. We have moved on.
It's legal language that is pending.
Thank you. All right, now, we are going to Q.
We'll try to make sure that's
correct. We are going to Q. BOS contingency transfer, county attorney.
You skipped P.
Oh, that P? Oh, P, county attorney compensation agreement. I wonder why I skipped that one.
So the compensation agreement in your package is the same as last year. None of the rates have changed, but I would propose this goes into effect July 1st to coincide with the fiscal year.
Okay.
It's been budgeted for that way. Last year, the agreement didn't get put in effect till September 1st, which is off cycle for the fiscal year.
Yeah.
Mr. Payne has proposed the same rates for this coming year. It's the same standard agreement we do each year with rates in it, but it's just to affect the start date of July 1st through the fiscal year.
Okay.
There's one thing that you should note on this, and this really doesn't affect the substance of it.
Right.
But the rate schedules in there list individuals.
Right.
We have had a change.
Need to
because
pull that up.
Christina Hoffman is in the process of resigning.
Christina Guidry?
Christina Guidry is in the process of resigning. She's moved out of town. Mm-hmm. She will be replaced. So we'll have somebody in that position, but it'll be the same rate. But
decreased it any, huh?
No.
So,
but it won't be her name.
Okay,
I'll make a motion for Ray.
Yes.
I'll get the short one.
Mm-hmm.
I move to approve the county attorney's compensation agreement for services for fiscal year 2018, effective July the 1st, 2017.
Okay. Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. All right, now we are at the BOS contingency transfer, county attorney.
I'll go ahead and do this one as well.
Okay.
The last year, when you budgeted for county attorney services, there was some discussion about how you're going to do services, and it got under budgeted, and then you cut a half a staff member out of my office, and all those dollars got pulled. That was never enough to cover the full contract costs for Mr. Payne's office services. We would have budgeted about 220. Now the cost actually ended up being higher than that the year.
Yeah.
The 168 that was budgeted, now with billings throughout the year, you need the other 105 to make it about 273. We still have the June billing to come, but we think we'll be pretty close to that target of 273 for the year, and that's what this is. It's just a transfer to cover that from what was under budgeted because
we knew that was pretty well cut.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. All right, I need a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $105,000 from the year 17 Board of Supervisors contingency budget to the year 17 County Attorney budget for legal services.
All right.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And now we have our burn building grant proposal, Ms. Cheryl Elliott.
Good evening.
Good evening. Sorry, I'm getting there.
We have an opportunity. opportunity that we want to tell you about and get your approval to move ahead with this application. As you know, training is a critical part in keeping volunteers, but also in keeping our providers up to their skill levels for fire and EMS. And you have approved a nice training budget for fire and rescue that we will be utilizing. One aspect of fire training, and by the way, I have a number of the fire personnel here with us tonight. Chief Brent, Mike Brent, who is the county fire chief, with Chief Constantino, who is the fire chief for Lake Monticello. And we have Roger Wilkins, who is who's been on the firefighter with Lake Monticello, but also has been on the committee looking at this burn building, who is the president of the Lake Monticello Fire and Rescue. And all of these gentlemen can speak to this project too, if you have any additional questions. So we've had this. We usually hold at least one firefighter one class, and then firefighter two every other year. And as a part of the one picture of the instructor class, and then of the firefighter class there. Part of the firefighter classes is they need to do live burns, so they need to practice going to smoky buildings and fire in a controlled setting. We utilize two buildings to do this. One is in Buckingham County, which is about 45 minutes to an hour away, and we utilize Albemarle, so that's about 35 minutes away. We have to reserve these buildings in order to be able to go, and with our instructors are our lead firefighters in the county. So when we have to go and do a burn, it's usually an all-day affair. We are taking our prime firefighters out of the county. So sometimes they have to juggle who goes and who doesn't go to make sure that we're not leaving the county uncovered. The other problem that we've run into is that we often get bumped. So if we have reserved Albemarle's burn building and they decide they want to do something that day, we're SOL. And so we have to reschedule, that's a technical term.
She's a sailor.
SOL.
I thought she was just a college
girl. I love it.
So what we have, now you got me flustered. The Virginia Department of Fire Programs has a grant program for burn buildings, and they provide for new buildings and also for renovations of old buildings. Of course, we don't have a renovation project. There's two grant cycles when they consider these grants, January 1st and July 1st. And we would like to apply to the July 1st grant cycle. The grant covers the burn building itself. The building itself is $450,000 with an additional $30,000 for engineering and architectural costs. There is a match or cost share for anything above that amount, and which we'll talk about in a little bit. What we're asking this evening is that you approve us applying for the grant. Then after the grant is awarded, the whole project has to go out to bid. And at that point, we have an opportunity to redo the design to be able to keep it within budget. For example, one of the recent burn building applications was for Montgomery County, Blacksburg area. And their burn building came back $750,000. Well, the grants were $450,000, and obviously that's not a very good match. So they went back and redid their design to a more of a modular metal building, I believe, and got it, the building, it was $370,000. And we do plan to make a trip down to see that facility and tour it, because that may likely be what we would do also because of the money. So what we're asking asking is for to approve the grant, and the grant covers building and the foundation, the architecture and engineering costs, and anything associated with the building, like the stone apron around it. It would not include things that are like the driveway or the site prep or I don't know if the dumpster would be included or not in that, but it has to be, the grant is for the building itself. That's where anything that's not in the building itself would be part of the match or the cost share that would be needed for the grant. There would be there are some tail costs to this building. There would be some annual costs for the maintenance of it with annual inspections. We need a licensed professional engineer, which we do have one on staff, so that would not be an added expense that we would need. Burn materials for the burns, all of that would be included in Fire and Rescue's budget, as well as maintenance and repairs in the building. Any electric costs and things would be put in the Fire and Rescue budget. Any upgrades to the facility would then either be budgeted for in a CIP status or applying for additional grants. For example, they would like to have a dry hydrant that they can practice, would be a pond where they can put the hoses in it to practice that. That would be, there are grant money through forestry, I believe, to be able to do that. So there are some additional funds that we can get to add on to the property as we go forward. The other option that the firefighters would like is a modular classroom to expand training space there. The Fork Union Fire Station has a smaller training facility. And as you know, with Lake Monticello building onto their fire station, there is a bigger training facility there also. So what we are proposing in the application is that we do a prototype one, which is a concrete, permanent concrete structure, similar to the Buckingham one that you saw pictures earlier. And we would place it on the Fork Union Fire Station property. There's about 100 acres there in this area, and it would be placed in this area. These are my drawings, not Mr. Stevens. Just looking, because the scale is going to be off, but about approximate placement of a driveway coming back. These are supposed to be parking spaces. And with the building with a stone apron around it, the preferred would be to have some concrete spaces back here where they could put a car on there for car fires or extrication practice and things like that.
Community center in front, isn't it?
Yes, this would be the community center. This whole air property is scheduled to be logged, and so when that is done, instead, I don't know what the plans are, whether it's select cutting through this, but this, wherever we would place this, Mr. Stevens would arrange for it to be basically clear cut or cut so that the stumps could be taken out easily for that area. The slave graveyard, I believe, is in this area. So we wanted to keep it over close enough. I mean, it could be in this area. If a modular training building would be put, we are anticipating it would be on this side of the parking lot. But again, this can be moved, and this is not to scale. Because if that's the firehouse, that's huge. And I'm not sure, the current building is approximately, do you remember what size?
With the two stories, it's approximately 800 square feet.
Two stories, but so 1,500 of the ground, which is not that large. That is all, that's all that I had.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Elliott?
Or for any of the firefighters.
Oh, firefighters, yes.
My question is, which we estimate the cost of about $150,000, these funds are considered match cost sharing. We intend to utilize county staff, planning, county timbering. What do we mean by that?
Well, we would not need to pay, we would not pay separately to go in and have the land timbered, because that's already part of what's going to be done for that property. And utilize it like FUSDI, for example, to put the water lines in. So we would not have to hire a contractor to do the water lines. And that part of this, I mean, we need
but
to know.
But we can cost out
we can,
the cost of those, and that's part of our match.
Right.
Our work effort is part of the match.
And there's right. no match required by the grant, but they only pay for the building itself. So like running the water lines
right.
additionally would be a cost that we would have that's part of cost share. And they look very favorably when a county is adding something and not expecting everything to come.
Yeah, that's part of the $150,000.
Yes.
It says local donations for the additional dollars. What donations are we talking about?
Like a concrete company to provide the concrete that's available.
They'll donate it?
Yes. I know that there's a number
that's
of
great.
Favors, like gravel, to get Luckstone, for example, provides stone, gravel, in donations for projects. There's just a number of products like that we think we can get. The dumpster, for example, to have.
Building supplies, somebody's going to furnish some materials on the building supplies. In other words, we're really not going to use any, quote, taxpayers' money, basically,
we
for that
$150,000. We are not planning to at this point. And when we get the grant, then we have to take it out to bid. So, and then you will have to approve the whole project before we start anything. Because you would have to approve where, you know, if there is additional dollars, how is that? And we would present to you where we think that is going to come from. And at this point, we are not asking, the fire group is not planning to ask the board for additional
okay.
dollars.
Forgetting the right. downstream maintenance of the building and the costs are going to be attributed
right.
to it in the future years. That's definitely going to happen. That'll be county costs. I would be flabbergasted if this ends up getting built for $450,000. End of discussion, no costs, and the county doesn't pay anything.
Correct.
Because there's a lot of labor that goes in
right.
this, a lot of coordination.
Well, she's saying that we're basically.
They are not asking for that now.
No.
If we apply for the grant, and the grant is approved, and we put it out to bid, and we can't get to some agreement that the board approves within the scope of dollars that you would be willing to approve, it doesn't go forward.
Right.
Sure.
The grant would
That's
just
right.
be returned. But I will be surprised if this ends up being a $450,000 neutral mm-hmm. project.
Yeah, well, I'd be surprised, too.
That's the reason I raised these questions beforehand, not afterwards.
Right,
we just don't know all those costs right now yet. So that's why when that comes to you, you will see the full measure and the full cost of the things. And maybe it's, you know, $3,800 total. Maybe it's $38,000 extra total. Maybe it's $350,000.
Yeah.
But we just don't know for sure yet until we kind of go through
but
the grant
it will
process. But you all have the say on when to stop that
right.
process.
Right,
so.
And also accepting the grant. Because
right.
the grant will come in, they'll say, yes, you've got it. But then we have to actually put the plans, we have to do all the building plans and submit them to the fire program's place to get their blessing on it before we can start.
There's a long ways to go, but we've got to get our foot in the door. And the foot in the door is the July 1st application to get in the grant pool.
So what do you think the timeline? Do you have an idea of the timeline?
It needs to be postmarked by July 1st, and the committee that reviews it will be reviewing it in August. So I expect that we would hear something in September. So then we would have to work at putting it out to bid and getting all the ducks in a row as far as, you know, how are we going to get the driveway in, what's the extra costs that would be involved, how much does the pipe cost, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions?
Would it be possible when you said you wanted an extra room for teaching, could that you use the community center?
Could the community center be used? Could it be used?
It
absolutely could.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way, the fire department, the training room there is very small.
Yeah, that's really small. Maybe 25 or 30 people in there, but if you have to move around, the big room at the community center.
Part of the reason for placing it at Fort Union because the county already owns a lot of the land there, and this has to be placed on county-owned land. It can't be purchased, it can't be on, like, we could not place it and get the state money and place it on Lake Monticello's property.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't think so.
It has to be on county-owned land. And it's kind of out of the way, yet it's still very central for all of the firefighters to be there. And we expect, too, for it to be used with surrounding counties. We often work with, even together, everybody does kind of their own training, and firefighter classes are as a group. But this would allow us to do more training between and among the different fire companies, too, and also to bring, like, Louisa in, or East Rivanna Fire, and Scottsville, for example, is planning to participate, but we also consider them as one of our fire departments, because they do have the 35 square miles that is their first due in the county. So we do plan not just to use this for our individual, you know, companies doing exercises there, but it will be more of a community gathering place for fire, and that they can, you know, there'll be a tower part on it that they can do ropes and some high angle work. They can do ladder work. That's why you put a gravel apron around it instead of cement, because otherwise the cement, the ladders can slip. So it's a little easier, I learned that, to put gravel there. And then with the extrication with the cars, to be able to have a vehicle back behind that they can practice with vehicle fires and that kind of thing.
I'd like to hear more about the advantage of having our own burn house here. I've heard that it's a traveling distance, and you may not get it when you need it. I know there's more of a hassle with the truck unit than that, and I know there's more headache than, you know what I mean? The human element of trying to go to Charlottesville and getting people together. No, I want to hear that.
That's absolutely correct, Ms. Booker. We've had occasions where we scheduled out burn day on Sunday or Saturday, and a week ahead of time, Alamar called and said, you walk because we're going to do this. So that throws your whole following in one place. Everything's been established for that end, and now you throw your whole class back. Mm-hmm. On a typical burn day, this is my big concern, is Chief McCannaday. The typical burn day, we have 8, 10, 12 instructors. We have 15 to 20 firefighter trainees. We have two engines and a crash truck that goes for air supply that has three operators. Mm-hmm. We got all these people leaving the county for the absolutely no good. Mm-hmm. We get a call, they can't get back.
Yes.
They can't get back in time to do us any good. We have the facility in the county. We can have some people leave that facility and go on a call. Mm-hmm. And right in the county. We right. Don't have anybody. Would be used with our neighbors, particularly like Scottsville, and I use Scottsville as an Alamar County company. Mm-hmm. They have problems themselves scheduling burn building themselves to use for their own stuff. So we would allow them, since they do help us so much, yes. We'd be allowing them the use of that facility so they can come in and do that. And we train together with them.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've been leading instructor and fire instructor too. That been running the last quite a few fire one and fire two classes. And what they say is absolutely true. And if we do get bumped from Alamar, let's say, because we disrespect Alamar, they have over 500 firefighters. And they have to take care of theirs first. Mm-hmm. We have to go to Buckingham, which is such a distance away, and we get charged when we do a burn down there. And whereas in Alamar, we don't, because we have such a good working relationship with Alamar that some of their guys take classes with us, and some of our people don't take classes with them, so we don't charge them. They don't charge us. But that will also force the county companies, the four county companies, to work together. Because right now, we want to train together as a department, or for, we have no place to go other than Albemarle, and we can't take all our folks to Albemarle or Buckhead here. At least we have a facility within the county, centrally located in Fort Union. Everybody in the county, all four county companies can go and still cover our county. We have which will be better, a better use of our resources and train our people.
Great, thank you.
So I'd like to, just a few more points to the board. My name is Roger Lopez, and being a B-certified instructor for both Fluvanna County and Albemarle County. One of the biggest things you need to take away from this is the advantage that it will give our local departments. I've worked for Albemarle for 8 years. I've been an instructor for them. I know what the benefits are having a facility of this nature readily available to our departments. I know how much it will improve our techniques, our skills. It will provide a benefit to all of our new and seasoned providers, something that you seriously need to take into consideration as our county grows. We need this. We need this to improve our services. I urge you to consider allowing us to put through this application while the state's offering the money.
All right, thank you so much for being here. Okay. Any other questions?
Indulge me with this very awkward motion, but just read it as it's stated.
The motion is on board.
Okay.
Who would like to read it?
I'll take it over. With respect to the burn building grant application to be submitted to the Virginia Department of Fire Programs, I move to direct and authorize the county administrator to be the official representative of the county in connection with such application, and appoint the emergency services coordinator as the grant manager to assist him on such project. And I further move to approve and ratify the burn building grant application, including all supplemental information provided by the county to the Virginia Department of Fire Programs related thereto.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Ms. Elvin. Now we have personnel policy revision 8.3, exempt service.
And I'll cover that, Ms. Booker.
Okay.
All this is really an update to an existing regulations. Mm-hmm. The policy is just updated to reflect which positions currently in our county serve as exempt positions. And there was just a number of outdated positions on there or changes in titles. And so if you look on the screen, the only thing that changed are the things in red. Mm-hmm. And that's just the names of those positions that are exempt employees versus non-exempt. And it was just a quick update.
Any questions? Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion.
I move to approve the exempt service policy as presented.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Second.
Yeah. All right, it has been moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. All right, reappointment, planning commission, Fort Union District.
And this one is Mr. Lewis Johnson requesting reappointment. That's the only candidate for that position.
Mm-hmm.
And he's currently on the commission and an active participant.
He does a good job.
He loves it.
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I move to appoint Lewis Johnson.
Reappoint
mm-hmm. Lewis Johnson to the Planning Commission, Fort Union District, with the term to begin July the 1st, 2017, and end June the 30th, 2021.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. All right, reappointment for JABA Advisory Council.
Ms. Elva Keys, the current appointee, just seeking reappointment to the JABA Advisory Council.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion?
I move to reappoint Elva Key to the JABA Advisory Council with a term to begin July 1st, 2017 and end in June 30th, 2019.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Appointment, reappointment, Agricultural Forester District Advisory Council.
Two positions open. Both are current appointees on the board, Mr. Haney and Ms. Murdoch, and both are seeking reappointment.
Okay.
How often do they meet?
They haven't met in 3 years, Ms. Harris? 5 years? Yeah. It's state required to have it, but I still have not figured out in the 6 years I've been here.
I'm on that committee, and it's been forever since we've had
years.
The BZA was 3 or 4 years before they met, and then now they've been meeting all the time.
Maybe a couple times a month.
This one is required by the state, but
maybe I'll meet the meeting.
And Mel was chair of that.
Yeah, maybe meet the meeting, see who's on the committee, just say hi.
We've been holding their paychecks for quite some time.
Yes, haven't we? We get better spot of pay.
No, they don't. There's no remuneration for this board.
All right.
Want me to make the motion?
Yes, please.
I move to reappoint David Haney and Deborah Murdoch to the Ag Forestry District Advisory Council with terms to begin July 1st, 2017 and end June 30th, 2021.
Okay.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody? Chair votes aye. All right. The next one is reappointment to the Social Services Board.
Ms. Deborah Johnson is seeking reappointment, and the second candidate is Mr. Curtis Putnam.
Oh, Johnson. That's right. I forget she's
Ms. Thomas.
Tom. Okay. All right.
I serve on that board, and she's an excellent contributor to that
Thank
board.
Thank you.
So I would like to make the motion.
All right.
I move to reappoint Deborah Thomas Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
To the Social Services Board with a term to begin July 1st, 2017 and to end June 30th, 2021.
Okay. Second. All right. It's been moved and second. All in favor?
Right.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. Reappointment or reappointment to the Library Board of Trustees.
This one just has one current appointee requesting reappointment, Ms. Angela Bergeron.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
I move to reappoint Angela Bergeron
mm-hmm.
to the Library Board of Trustees with term to begin July 1st, 2017 and end June 30th, 2021.
Okay. Second.
Second.
Okay. Mr. Bryan, second. Sorry. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And now we have the BRA financing resolution. Mr. Eric Dome.
Members of the board, so we've been talking about the designs, crossroads, water and sewer project, financing for quite some time. We've gone over different scenarios, different loan amounts, different terms, all that. So we're just going to jump right into it. So just a little update. So this is financing through the Virginia Resource Authority, the Review Pool Financing Program. That's the summer pool. We're doing this, we compared all our options for going this route to financing this project. It saves kind of going into a pool scenario, it saves on legal and other costs, but also we get the benefit of getting AAA and AA interest rates. So the board approved for us to submit the VRA application, and we submitted that on May 1st, and we submitted slightly over $8.5 million application. June 1st, we were approved, and actually between May 1st and today's date, we've had numerous presentations discussing the different options for financing this project. And so then today, you will have to adopt a resolution determining a maximum loan amount, maximum principal amount, the term, and the not to exceed interest. So just to kind of show you kind of where we've been through numerous presentations as the time has kind of surpassed the rate trend. And this is kind of, as we've been talking about, the 20-year rate. You can see from March 22nd, it was at 3.24%. When we got down to May 10th, it was 2.95%. And then BRA did some preliminary pricing for us about a week ago, and we're at 3%. So we're kind of holding pretty strong right in that 3% range. Just a recap of the construction cost for this project. Like I said, these are the engineer's estimates, and there is also about $930,000 contingency built into that. But that does not include if type of additional expansion or anything like that all the way. But right now, we're looking at $10.2 million for the project for the total construction cost. So the last meeting we had, the board said, after we discussed it, we kind of discussed $8 million principal amount, and then we also, after an additional meeting, we discussed an $8.5 million principal amount. We discussed a 20-year term, and then we discussed not to exceed interest rate of 4%. With going off of the $10.2 million project costs, and then let's just say we get funded for the $8.5 million, that would require us only using about $1.7 million out of fund balance to put towards the project. So you can see right here, we're at about $4.8 million right now in our fund balance, and if we only have to use about $1.7 million of that, that'll still leave us with about $3 million in kind of our above and beyond reserve fund balance.
These costs have constantly gone up too, haven't they?
What, the construction costs?
Yes.
The 10
over the last year or so, couple years.
Over the last 4 years, yes.
Yes.
The 10.2 is what you've seen over the last 60
days. But they
days.
Were much less than that several years back, those
well,
projections.
We had some.
The original projections were 6 to 8 million for the project.
Yes.
I think the preliminary.
That was without contingency.
The preliminary engineering report always had about $8 million.
Yes, but before we even did the PER with that company, we were always talking 6 to 8 million. But that was without contingency, and it wasn't going down 15 that far. It was just a stretch of 250. So the numbers have continually changed over the last 4 years, and mostly up.
Naturally.
Yes. Unfortunately.
So kind of where we are today. So as I said, this meeting, in order for us to move forward, the board would have to approve resolution and also ratify the advertisement for the BRA bond public hearing, which would be July 5th, and there's some advertisement dates in there. June 23rd, which is Friday, BRA basically needs to receive local approvals, which is basically the financing resolution from the county if we want to move forward with this. We are going to have some advertisement dates on the 22nd and 29th for a public hearing on July 5th. On July 5th, you would then ratify the resolution that you approved this evening, and then the tentative bond sale date is August 2nd. So to go back into some of the financing options again, that, as we talked about before, kind of where we ended up, we were with looking at the $8.5 million, and we're looking at 20-year rates. So these rates were based upon 5-10, but I got some new numbers from BRA. So, like I said, as the other slide I showed, presented had up on the slide screen, showed 3% was the rate. Annual debt service would be about $576,000 on average.
And that starts in mid next year?
So, in fiscal year 18, there would be that. There would be only interest payments in fiscal year 18. Fiscal year 19 would be the full-on principal and interest payments. That's when they would start.
That'd be the half million.
It would be over half a million, $576,000.
So we'll only pay interest next year.
Yes, and then we there's a slide we can discuss how we want to do that. So when we submitted the application, to capitalize fiscal year 18's interest. So basically, we're financing the interest. If we don't want to do that, we can, we can lower our overall amount that we're borrowing, and we can the board can approve paying for interest payments out of fund balance fiscal year 18.
So that's actually almost close to a 2-cent increase if the rates stay the same when we hit the full amount.
A 2-cent increase in tax rate.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to fund it. But remember, we've already built it into your budgets.
Wasn't that $5 million one of them that we had built?
What did we put in for 18? We put in.
I don't know. We didn't have any debt service for the project in fiscal year 18. Because we knew we were going to
was just putting out yours, but yes, it's about 2 cents, depending on what a penny is, so a couple cents for that.
The interest payments for fiscal year 18 would be about 236,000.
Yeah, and rather than financing that, especially, let's say you went to the 8.5 million, and you need another 1.7 to make up the 10.2. So if you did the 8.5 million, instead of capitalizing interest, because you saved a little bit in your fund balance back there, pay that out of cash next year.
Yeah.
Don't have to build it into the budget. Pay it out of cash, and then that decreases what you're financing a little bit.
The big decisions for the board this evening are, one is what term we want to approve on the resolution. You know, we discussed the 20-year term, and that was kind of the overall consensus of the board. The second thing is capitalized interest. Do we basically want to capitalize interest and finance the FY18 interest payments in this debt issuance? If yes, then we really don't have any changes. And if we don't want to do that, we might be able to decrease the not to exceed principal amount, or we just leave it the same. Like I said, because we're only going to borrow what we actually need. If we tell them we don't want capitalized interest and we don't want to include capitalized interest, then that amount will just come out. We're not going to be taking out any additional more than what we really need. But if we do that, then like I said, the board's going to have to then commit to then funding those interest payments, those fiscal year interest payments, some way, somehow. Like I said, Mr. Nichols noted, probably have fund balance.
So what this will do, I guess, is what do we have about it? We're about $100 million in debt now. That run us up to about $108 million then?
We're higher than that.
I knew you'd ask that, Mr. Weaver.
Good.
So at the end of fiscal year 16, we were at around $98 million. At the end of fiscal year 17, because we took out, we retired about $6 million worth of debt just in normal payoffs.
Right.
And we took out some additional debt for the energy project, which was about $7.4 million, plus we had about another $1.5 million in addition on the radio project. Remember, we originally took out $6.6 million.
But to build the tower.
Yep, we retired that to build the tower, but then we took out about another $8.2 million.
So you're all hard to keep up with, switching all these funds around here and there and pulling it here, and we paid that off. And
no, sir. You're hard to keep up because you're the one that keeps approving this stuff. We have to take action on it then.
Yeah.
It's too much. That's the bottom line.
To answer your question, for like capital project, you know, project debt, you know, that we have, not including like, compensated absences and all that, we're looking at roughly right around $100 million is where we end up fiscal year 17.
How about 18?
18 will probably be right around the same, because we're going to have some large, the $1.5 million that we paid for, that we're going to be paying for the literary loan, that's a payoff of fiscal year 18. We're also going to have our first year of, so normally we pay about $5 to $5.5 million a year in just straight principal reduction payments. We'll have probably about another $1 million on top of that, because we're making such large payments on the public radio system. So we're gonna end up right around, probably around the $100 million in 18.
So as we decrease the principal on the high school of about $2.5 to $3 million, we're replacing that with this other debt then.
Yes.
To get where we are.
Right, yes. The good thing is, it looks like our debt's not going up. Well, our debt went up, but other debt went down.
That's right.
And so the total debt is not higher, but you were taking, that's right, dropping off some and adding some on. And neutral's not where you want to be all the time, but it's better than going up. And we are continuing to pay off
anything. It'd be better if it's going down.
Yes,
so after fiscal year 18, I see fiscal year 18, assuming that there's no other big, gigantic projects that the county wants to take on, and I don't know if we have the manpower to take on any.
In 2036, it's going to drop.
We're doing a big swimming pool.
Yeah, we got to get that swimming pool.
Got to get that swimming pool down south side and flu van, and then we need at least two more swimming pools.
Yes. Very good.
So after this, so once fiscal year 18 comes on, goes by, like I said, we're still going to be right around 100, but if we don't take out any additional debt for any new big projects at that point, we'll probably, you know, we'll be doing about a $6 to $7 million in principal reduction every year at that point.
That's good. What about the one that we're studying right now and we're supposed to get some answers on it come the end of the year? That we have how many people on that committee on the communications?
Oh, broadband access.
Broadband, yes. How's that going to work in, if it works in?
Well, anywhere from zero, truly zero, because there it's a full range of options of we do nothing and other people do some stuff, up to whatever the sky is the limit if the county wanted to build its own broadband infrastructure. What you'll get is recommendations in that whole scope, but largely it'll be recommendations built around this CSC, this company that's working with Central Virginia Electric Cooperative, that will do most of the heavy lifting because it's part of this program, and the county can say, yes, we want to go forward with no county fund support, yes, we want to go county forward with a lot of county fund support, or yes, we want to go forward with partial county support, like letting providers use our towers, or letting this infrastructure be used, or this broadband, this cable be used. There's a whole range from zero contribution from the county up to whatever the sky is the limit.
What might the sky be the limit? I mean, what's ballpark figure the sky's the limit?
Any number you can think of, and I don't mean that.
20 million?
Yes, I don't mean that frivolously at all. It could be 20 million, but I can't imagine that the board would approve that or even be wanting to go beyond, you know, nominal support. Well, I can't speak for the board, but I doubt that there's going to be a lot of votes for spending a load of money on broadband. I would expect the board might be considering spending some county resources, not necessarily dollars, but staff time, engaging with those companies, talking to providers, and maybe some discounted rates on tower rental space for broadband to enhance our broadband. I'm certainly not going to recommend that the county take on and become its own broadband authority and start offering broadband to the community. We can't afford the time and effort and the staffing it would take to do that. You'll get the full range of scope, though, of recommendations.
Albemarle County has some concerns also about those costs.
Absolutely. And so does Louisa County. Louisa County created a broadband authority, and they're building towers all over.
Do they have broadband?
They've been talking about broadband.
They're trying to expand their broadband.
And they built 10 towers.
Right, they're 10 to 100 foot. Are they 100 foot? What they?
Yeah.
Louisa.
What they built, 100 to Louisa?
Yeah.
10 to 100 foot towers.
What does that exactly do?
Most of these connections are,
I think,
said
100
so that you need line of sight. So in order to actually get to, you know, cover as many people as possible, you've got to have towers that
direct sight.
So that they have direct sight, and then in a lot of cases they might have to clear trees, or whatever the case may be. It also allows them to connect those 10 towers around each other, so you have a central access point where they're serving the internet from. So that's where you need those towers. The normal way internet is provided is you went through your copper or fiber. That's much, much more expensive than your wireless.
But we are doing some fiber.
Well, fiber to our core buildings, but our core buildings are on a structure and a route that already is pretty well served.
Uh-huh.
You know, internet service and telephone service along 15 and 53 is not necessarily the big problem. It's in the hinterlands and the other.
Yes,
areas.
That's
and
where
that's where it's much more difficult. But this, I don't know if it's Accela or a CSC, this company has some federal contracts and grants to work with electric cooperatives to help expand broadband service in rural areas, and we happen to be benefited by it because that company is working with Central Virginia Electric Cooperative, which covers a fairly large swath of our county. I don't know what the end result is going to be. Mr. O'Brien and the
committee use wireless technology, and Central Virginia Electric Co-op has offered to waive the poll fees. Typically, you pay $10 per poll to have any type of equipment on it. So they're waiving that up to, I think, $1 million or something along those lines for a number of years.
Federal government is?
No.
Central
Virginia Electric Cooperative. And
doing that, they're making it less expensive, which is terrific, and oftentimes those poles are, again, you know, kind of in line as to where you might have that community, so that makes it easier to pass.
Mm-hmm. Less expensive for commercial providers to provide service in areas they wouldn't normally.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the part of that deal was that they had to provide a fairly high density coverage as part of the arrangement they made for the capabilities. Mm-hmm. But so this company, CSE, is the company that was bought out, the company that was operating in Louisa County, providing wireless internet service. And that company had a nominal amount of success in hooking up a network of businesses along those lines. The fiber that we're bringing along the lines, we have an extra capacity in that fiber, depending on how it's done. It could be tied in if you had, say, one of the towers nearby there, which I'm sure we would, to be the point of presence for some of the data.
It's a really complicated issue and question, and that's why I can't even begin to give you a number, but it's between zero and a big number.
20 million.
And unfortunately,
maybe 40 million to provide, if you wanted to provide full broadband coverage around our county, it would take a load of money, but that's not even realistic.
It's not realistic.
Okay, the 10 million, tell me what we're getting for that 10 million. Just, I don't want you to stand up there an hour, but just a few sentences to cover that, to give me a...
The 10 million, what are you getting?
For the water system?
Yes.
You're getting water and sewer service from the Women's Correctional Facility and likely a little bit right in that area. From there to the intersection of 50 and
right.
250 and 15 and about a half mile down, Mr.
Right.
Stevens, and about a half mile down 15. And that'll be full water and sewer service along that trunk corridor.
You'll have 500 gallon elevated storage tank?
Right.
1,000 gallon elevated storage tank, a pump station.
Sewage pump station.
And waste treatment, we have 125,000 gallons there at the present.
That's the initial commitment from them based on their excess
yes.
capacity.
Uh-huh.
The good thing is that plant has excess, it has the ability to grow more capacity with the existing physical plant.
Yeah, how much was it? 250, was it?
Well, they're running at about 350 now, Wayne, or 250? The wastewater.
It's 300,000 gallons.
Okay. And they're running some less than 80% of that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. They're less than half because they're the excess capacity of what they can't go above 80% without some needing to plant.
And then I think of expanding the prison right. because they already have capacity for like 1,200 or 1,400, right, inmates?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're going
to
expand.
So the benefit to that plant is, A, we're going to get cheap water and sewer. B, it's an existing physical plant for water and sewer treatment. And tapping into it and using it and expanding it is vastly cheaper than us investing alone.
And that's our designated growth area after all.
Right. That, to me, made more sense.
Yeah.
So to go back to this slide, so the decision the board has to make is the term, capitalized interest, yes or no, the not to exceed amount, and then the interest rate, the true interest cost. And one thing I just want to discuss with the board, let's just say that when, hypothetically, I don't expect it to come in at this, but let's just say hypothetically, the rate comes in at 4.01% and the board sets it at 4%, like, we cannot close on the transaction. So I would prefer to see the board maybe not lock ourselves in, maybe set an interest rate like 4.25%.
Didn't you say they were at 3% now?
We're at 3% now, and I don't see it happening, but...
If it does, you're out of luck. I mean, that's, and I'm not suggesting you need to go to 4.5 or 5 or 8 or whatever, because maybe at 8 we'd be priced out of the market. It may be what it is. But just so that the transaction doesn't go south, because you won't have a chance to go revisit. It's
What happens is if we come in at 4.01% and the board sets it at 4%, we're going to have to wait till the fall.
Yeah, we have
and
to wait. It's different.
If you have that trend, interest rates would probably be
longer. It would be worse than that. Right.
So you may as well set
it. I don't expect that to even come. But
we get the rate for that day.
Yes.
Right.
If they don't, if we put it at 4.50.
No, they're not going to.
No, if you set it at 9?
No.
you're still getting whatever the rate is that day. You're just saying don't exceed this.
That's a not-to-exceed rate. So
we'd just feel more comfortable with 4.25 just because what if it just happens to change? I don't think it's going to, but I don't want to lose the document and we'll lose another 6 months of time.
I have another question. You know, we've gone above our...
our debt ratio?
Policy. Yeah, yes. Do we need to change that?
It's our local policy, and I would rather not increase our policy. I'd rather still continue to try to
get back to 12%.
Okay. And we haven't been bopped by the rating agencies, even though we were right at it when they last.
No, because we've always had, you know, we've had conservative fund balance policies and all that. You know, the rating agencies know that we're doing lots of good work through, you know, all these different economic development efforts.
You're doing a lot of good work.
Yeah. If you were tapping the $8 million strict reserve, then they wouldn't be liking us so much.
But haven't put our fingers on that.
Right.
Yeah.
We've had a really strong fiscal policy of not touching that, and we haven't touched it in the...
And I think that's one of the best things that the board has done.
Indeed.
Since I've been here, having that reserve.
Stuck with it, yeah.
So,
piggybacks are good.
Yes, they are, especially emergency.
What's the board's thought on the capitalized interest, you know, basically including the FY18 interest payments in the proceeds, or would we rather not do that and just pay for the interest payments out of the fund balance?
To me, it's cheap money at 3%.
But you can spend your fortune on cheap money and be broke then. You know, I mean, I understand that, and I agree with what you're saying, but it just very seldom ever happens.
Well, you need money for different opportunities.
Right? I know. I've heard that before.
As we decrease our fund balance, we have less of that money available, which, you know, is, to me, we're doing it the wrong time. We want to have more cushion in our fund balance because we're going to have opportunities where we want to, you know,
spend more money.
Yeah, that's what it also
potentially have to offer. He didn't say incentives for the right opportunities.
Opportunities, right.
Well, I mean,
I've seen people go bankrupt with opportunities.
If a business came into town and wanted to hire 250 people and brought those jobs over, and they were looking for economic incentives, and if we didn't have any wiggle room left, boy, that wouldn't be ideal, would it? So,
great point.
We should keep a little bit of cushion.
I think that fund balance alone.
To me, financing the $260,000 is fine. It's already in the calculations. It's what we have in place. Mm-hmm. I would keep that extra money in the fund balance.
What do you want?
I'm on the fence about it. Since we are pulling out a little bit more and we weren't using as much fund balance as we originally thought, I would possibly tend to pay the interest, the 18 interest out of fund balance itself.
Instead of paying interest on interest.
Right.
Here's your fund balance numbers. I mean, that's where you'd be at. We have to take 232 off that.
Paying interest out of fund balance. Huh?
When you said take 236 off.
236 would have to be another one on there. Therefore, instead of 2.907, you'd be 236 less than that.
Okay.
But you wouldn't be paying interest on that 236.
Right.
But that, again, it's not a huge amount of money either way, and there is going to be some need for flexibility in the coming years to negotiate with vendors and providers, but
such as
some of the things we've already talked about in closed session.
No, that's another thing to consider, what's going on here,
and also just,
and it bothers me.
And one thing too, just if we take out that capitalized interest out of this, it'll lower our annual debt service by about
$5,000.
Yeah. So it's at 576, 574.
That's not very much difference.
No, it really isn't. And 236 is not going to make the big cat's meow difference on the 2.9 million. I was worried a few weeks ago when we were talking about doing $6 million here and taking $4 million from fund balance, because the $4 million would have taken the strip just down to zero.
That
worries the heck out of me, even though I think this is going to be a reasonable year for revenues, and I think next year will be a reasonable year for revenues, so you'll rebuild some of it. I'm worried that you don't have a cushion in the green. You still got the $8 million, but you're not going to touch that.
What's a reasonable year for revenues? I mean,
well, reasonable year for revenues is when they're not going down.
Right. When has our real estate gone down?
Our real estate actually
went down precipitously in 2012 or 13.
You lowered the rate, but it doesn't mean you're not still paying the same.
Oh, you mean as far as the actual true rate?
Yes.
No, I think you've only done that once.
That's always, we talked about that before. Yeah,
you've done that once in the last 5 years. You settled below the equalized rate.
State tax revenues, all those other revenues.
Sure. Revenues have gone up, and that was good.
And personal property tax.
Funding for the schools went up, which was good, although it didn't decrease the county contribution.
Ours is $400,000, wasn't it? Something like that? Or 1.4? Which was it?
I'm not sure, sir. What?
What was our school contribution this time?
Oh, 19 million.
Yeah, I know that, but the increase.
Oh, the increase for this is $476,000, under $500,000.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this fiscal year in 17, not next year. The schools end up getting a bunch more
from multiple
sources.
From the state, yeah.
And all it did is add to the stack, but it didn't decrease the county contribution because the county had already pointed up to that.
You've already had projected that.
Yes, and there's some excess at the end of the school year that is going to be available in the school budget, but I'm pretty sure the schools are going to be asking for other reasons to spend it on something else.
That's right. So,
but keep in mind, the fund balance supports schools, county, all functions, whether it's economic development or new IT or whatever, and you don't want that. You don't want to lose all your flexibility on your fund balance. So I'm liking the idea that you're only potentially going to have to use 1.7 on the fund balance and 8.5 on the debt service financing, especially at those low rates, because you leave about $3 million in fund balance.
Well, look, things are going to cost more tomorrow.
Yep.
So that's a given. And when you're earning money, we're earning 1% almost on $232,000. So it's 2%, and when you look at the devaluation of money over a period of time, at 3%, we're fortunate that we're spending money, we're doing our infrastructure projects now, as opposed to when interest rates are 6%, 7%, or 8%. It's an advantage to have that extra bit of money. When I first came on the board, the fund balance we had, $8 million extra. It's gone down a lot. So, to me, having extra room to cushion is important. We're going to tie our hands. Otherwise, we're going to end up,
hands tied.
What's going to happen when all of a sudden, the next board has to do something and they're at $8 million and that's the reserve that you can't do. So you don't have that much flexibility. Flexibility is important. And $2 million is, even at $2 million, that's not a lot of flexibility.
Okay, so let's make a decision.
What is when you have still reserve? Fund balance is over.
But you can't go below that reserve.
Well, you can't, but you can in an emergency.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to make a decision on capitalizing interest.
I personally think we don't capitalize it until then. 20 years, don't capitalize the interest, $8.5 million and $4.25 million. Move on.
Okay. Do we have a motion for anything?
Just don't include it. You're saying don't include capitalized interest in.
No, he's saying include it. You want it included, right? You don't want to take it out of fund balance.
No.
You want us to pay the capitalized interest.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yes. Right.
So you want to say yes?
Say yes, no change required.
Right.
Okay.
Do we have a motion on that?
We just need to know which way you want to go on the capitalized interest, right. And just tell us the motion. Yes. You want to tell us the 20-year term, 85, okay. And what interest rate. And if you want to tack on the end with capitalized included interest, yes. Including debt financing.
The one thing I would say is right now the resolution includes the capitalized interest. So if we're not going to do that, I would probably say something in the motion to take out the capitalized interest. Yeah.
You don't have to say anything unless you're going to change the way we're doing
that. Okay, this is already.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution entitled Resolution Approving a Plan of Financing with the Virginia Resource Authority, which shall be for a term not to exceed 20 years and a principal amount not to exceed $8.5 million and bear interest at a rate not to exceed 4.25%.
Do we have a second? I'll second going once?
I don't understand. What we're doing here, but
so yeah. it, the motion as presented mm-hmm. means that next year we'll pay $236,000 in capitalized interest.
Okay. How much?
$236,000 in capitalized interest. Right. Not any debt payment, right. But just the capitalized interest. If you choose not to, you're pulling that out and you'll pay it out of cash. And it won't be included in the $8.5 million debt financing, whatever it comes down to.
Okay, so we're borrowing the money to pay
yes.
the interest.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. I don't think we need to do that. You don't think we need to do that?
Me personally? I mean, I don't.
No, you, the finance director.
Yes. Well, me, the finance director, no, I would probably not. Since we're taking out a little extra, I would probably pay the interest payment.
Okay.
Out of cash.
Okay. Then they don't have a second.
So
you can make a motion.
All right, you do. Go ahead.
Okay.
Same motion, but say excluding capitalized interest, would that be sufficient?
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution entitled Resolution Approving a Plan of Financing with the Virginia Resources Authority, which shall be for a term not to exceed 20 years and a principal amount not to exceed $8,500,000 and bear an interest rate not to exceed 4.25%.
Excluding payment of capitalized interest.
Excluding capitalized interest.
And which is
$236,000.
Which is $236,000.
So you're taking $2 million out of fund balance instead of $1.7 million. Basically what that translates to.
Indeed, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah, that's
second.
That's perfect.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And chair votes aye. Okay, that's good.
And then the next right. item here, this is just, so the board has to ratify the advertising. So
okay.
we're under, because we're issuing revenue bonds, we have to hold a public hearing. Due to some of the timing of when we found out about that we have to advertise for a public hearing, we could not get authorization from the board prior to trying to get an ad into the Fluvanna review because we have to advertise the Fluvanna review tomorrow and then June 29th to be able to meet all the public hearing requirements. So this motion just basically ratifies the advertisements for public hearings.
They'll be in the paper tomorrow next week, and he did it without asking you because he didn't have time to ask you.
Okay.
And we're asking you to ratify.
Okay.
We didn't even realize that this was required a public hearing because normally they don't, but because it's a revenue bond, it has to. So we're still on time for it, but we just have to ratify. Normally we come and say, we request that we can advertise this, and you say yes, then we go advertise. Mm-hmm. We just got it to the whatever you this week.
Just moving it up a little bit.
Well, it has to be advertised tomorrow to make time for the July 5th, but we couldn't get you to make that decision by last Friday when it had to be in, so we're just asking to ratify.
We'll forgive you all this.
Right. And move the Board of Supervisors ratify the advertisement of a public hearing on the proposed issuance of water and sewer revenue bond and the estimated maximum principal amount not to exceed $8.5 million to be sold to the Virginia Resource Authority, VRA.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Okay, great, thank you. Now, consent agenda. We have minutes of June 6, 2017, CRMS FCPC Central Virginia, unexpected repairs, Fiscal year 17 Department of Social Services share of the cost allocation funds, staff performance bonuses, and accounts payable report. Anyone like to pull anything?
I was going to pull some things.
Okay.
Let's see, 239. Let's.
Which one?
Do we have time? I don't want to take up time here for.
You're on accounts payments. You're pulling, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other items going to be pulled?
Any other items going to be pulled?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the same accounts payable.
No, but all in AP.
All of them is with accounts payable. Okay.
So what line, sir?
Now I'm looking.
Okay.
What were we doing on 245? Make sure that I have the right one.
Okay,
no, 239.
The uniforms?
Well, I'm 239. That was
39. Assistance and lodging. That's probably a meal cost for someone who was on travel. It may have been one of the sheriff's deputies or department assistant. Yeah, sheriff's office. So it's probably one of the ones at the academy. Oh, that's true.
Well, if it was extradition, it would probably come out of the corrections and detention budget.
But it would be on, I can't see. Here
this is subsistence and lodging. This is under subsistence and lodging line.
That's funny. Yeah, that would have been in the
academy.
Overnight, somewhere. Yeah.
Can't reach
it, Sean. No, I haven't. It seems like I get these things confused. Let's see. 442.
Tractor Hill equipment, vehicle power equipment.
Yeah, the tractor equipment, vehicle power. We had, what was that?
We'll have to pull it up and see it because it says supply, so it could have been a whole variety of things. We'll pull the document.
It wouldn't have been on anything to do with our new one, would it?
No, we bought the accessories of that one.
Well, that's what I was wondering if you were. 796, and that's it.
Okay. Ryan,
what is that? Facebook marketing rack card design.
So, these are rack cards, Mr. Weaver, these kinds of things. This one happens to be a map, but the rack cards are like the flyers that have the Pleasant Grove House. It's like kind of hard cardboard and it's front and back. Those are marketing rack cards. They're tourism cards or different kinds of things. That may have been a year's supply of things that we use at Pleasant Grove House and other places.
So we paid $2,000 for that.
I don't know.
$1,982.
Yeah, it's probably some of the flyers that economic development uses to put in all the business packages.
Okay.
All right. Okay, can we have a motion on the consent agenda?
I move to approve of the consent agenda with the payroll total of $1,584,421.90.
Do we have a new business? All right, public comment number two. Anyone would like to speak to the board? Come to the podium, give your name, address. You have 5 minutes to speak to the board. I don't see anyone. Closing public comment.
We need to go ahead and extend.
All right. Closed meeting. We have closed meeting.
You can do it
when
you come out.
Yes.
You do the motion to extend.
We need a motion to extend now.
Mr. Chair,
he has memorized this time.
I don't. I'm too tired.
Come on.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I move the Lenin County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting.
He bugged me about memorizing.
Provisions of section 2-2-3711A1, 2-2-3711A3, 2-2-3711A4, 2.2-3711A5, 2.2-3711A7, 2.2-3711A8, the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, real estate, privacy, and respective industry litigation, legal matters.
All right, I need a second.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. We're going to close session. We are now in closed session. Thank you all for coming.
Need a vote.
Oh, vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
We can't say.
Somebody say no. Chair votes aye. I'd like to have a motion for us to go come back in open session.
Madam Chair, I move to that again in session live.
No, you come out of closed session.
Let's come out of closed session first.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the back end Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, considered, or considered.
All right, we need a second.
Second.
All right, it has been motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, record a vote. Mr. Aye. Weaver? Aye. O'Brien? And Chair, aye. Okay, may I have an adjournment?
Motion to extend.
Oh, that's right. We have to extend.
Chair, I make a motion to extend the meeting to 12:45.
All right. Second?
Second.
All right. We extend the meeting to 12:45. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Okay.
Now for
action. I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Community Service Award Resolution Honoring Richard P. May.
Okay. Second? All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye now. Motion for adjourn.
No,
another motion?
Yeah.
Where have I been?
That's all.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
$2,500 for the new CSA coordinator, Ms. Ursula Hill, effective July 17, 2017.
All right, a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second. All right, we're adjourned.